like those Christmas cookies, sugar. I sure do like those Christmas cookies, babe. The ones that look like Santa Claus, Christmas trees and bells of stars. I sure do like those Christmas cookies, babe.
Now, Christmas cookies are a special treat. The more she bakes, the more I eat. And sometimes I can't get myself to stop.
Mm-hmm, I know what you mean there, Phil.
Sometimes she'll wait till I'm asleep to take the ones I didn't eat and put those little sprinkly things on top. What do you think about it, Joe?
I sure do like those Christmas cookies, sugar.
All right, Todders, we got some learning to do here. My nephew brought home another book the other day, just burns me up. Now they want to politically correct up Christmas stories so they don't offend nobody and everybody everywhere can enjoy it. So this is a story formerly known as 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. It is now called 'Twas the Night Before a Non-Denominational Winter Holiday. It was the night before a non-denominational winter holiday when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The neutral gift sacks were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that a non-specific holiday figure would soon be there. Children of every race, creed, and nationality were resting all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar-free plums danced in their heads. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I got up out of bed to see what was the matter and to see who was violating the neighborhood sound level ordinance. But what in my wondering eyes did appear but an emissions-free vehicle, an 8-size Challenge reindeer. Holiday figure was so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be Holiday Figure. He had a broad but normal face, an advanced-sized belly, and he laughed. Lady of the evening, lady of the evening, lady of the evening. You believe that? What in the world? You can't even say ho, ho, ho no more. What kind of commie crap is this? I don't care who you are. His name is Santa Claus, and he cracks deer with a horse whip, breaks into people's houses, drinks rum and eggnog, and looks like Uncle Jesse from Dukes of Hazzard.
You know, dancing and dancing and prancy and tricksy, cosmic and cupid. Wait, isn't that little love fairy? And Donna and Brittany.
Uncle Si, there's no reindeer named Brittany.
But do you remember the most famous redneck of all?
Uncle Si, reindeer, not redneck. Let me show you how it goes, Jack.
Happy, happy, happy. On this last Sunday of Advent, Christians anticipate the coming of the Lord on Christmas and His second advent at the end of time. As we approach the Christmas season, we can take solace in the absence of the Congress and executive from the Imperial City and focus on hope, peace, joy, and love. But we must always remember that just because we are celebrating Christmas is no reason to ignore the anti-constitutionalist, anti-conservative, anti-American, and increasingly anti-Christian political scheming of the tyrants. Jesus Christ is the King of Peace, and shortly after His birth, the government sent soldiers to kill Him. It took them 33 years to get the job done, but He didn't stay dead. He rose again on the third day. When you stand for truth, justice, and true love, you will be persecuted by the state. Rejoice! It is an honor to risk our lives, our liberty, and our fortunes in the cause of freedom. 2013 started out with Boehner's re-election as Speaker, Obama's second term, and Rince Priebus as RNC chair again. Obamacare rolled on. We had a shutdown showdown to try to stop it, and the rhinos caved. Then Reid nuked the Senate, and Minnie Mitt Ryan increased spending by $65 billion in order to reduce it by $23 billion over 10 years. As the Fed tapers, quantitative easing from a mere $85 billion per month to $75 billion a month. Woohoo, big savings. Yeah, it sucks. As the Botox witch says, embrace the suck. And we nearly blew up the Middle East unilaterally, and the NSA spying still goes on. But we also had Rand's filibuster, Ted's epic 21-hour speech, and over 2 million signed on to don't fund it. Now, as we cave to Iran and China and run out of money, we decide it's time to attack a duck hunter because he spoke his mind. Welcome to life in America in 2013. But there's always hope, especially at this time. You have a choice. You can work hard now to further liberty by having real conservatives and real libertarians take over the GOP, or watch the statists in both parties return from their Christmas break to push their agenda for their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who want to fundamentally transform our republic into an empire abroad and a police state at home. End the destruction of our economy by the Republican-Democrat duopoly and their masters at the Federal Reserve by standing with real conservatives who were right to demand the repeal or at least the delay of this Obamacare debacle. Celebrate Christmas. Enjoy the presents. Eat the good grub. But know that your duty, your work, and your purpose does not take a break for the holiday. Remember, the devil never sleeps. To defeat the cultural Marxists, politically correct idiots, statists, collectivists, oligarchs, useful morons, and their fellow travelers, especially the Democrat socialists in the Democrat Party, first, you must crush the rhinos. For liberty. Happy, happy, happy Christmas from Liberty's Thunder. You are live with Rex and Trog. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, your radio commander, broadcasting from the Imperial City.
I'm your co-host, Trog. That's short for Trogloddite. And someday I'll tell you the story of that and how I got that name. But, you know, been an interesting year. That's about all I can say about it right now. I think that the one thing in terms of, you know, hope, it is Christmas, so you try to look for those points of light. One of the things that is happening is that it's getting bad enough, and there's enough lies and enough exposure to the lies and enough insanity coming out of Congress that I think we're going to see another 2010 Tea Party type wave going into 2014. I don't stand around, you know, holding my breath for anything in this day and age. People continually shock me at their lack of knowledge or their lack of understanding of what's going on in the country or refusal to understand what's going on in the economy or their unwillingness to look at the Republican Party and realize that it's been infiltrated by traitors that would fit into the Democrat Party and nobody would blink an eye. And these people have power and they're in key positions. They've been in there forever, which is, a kind of a hint for term limits, which could be a discussion we could have sometime somewhere because there's a lot of mixed views on it and, you know, what's the way to do it and how to do it. But our founding fathers never envisioned a professional politician. You know, most politicians in the founding of this country were men that had to give up their time on their farms or their factories or their businesses, and they had to sacrifice to go to government, you know, to build a country and to govern. And nowadays we have people that, you know, come out of college with their law degree, could be a hint right there.
All right.
And go into politics, and then they stay forever, and then they come out filthy rich, and they come out filthy. And I think that I see things today, and you and I communicate all the time on these things, but I see things today that 10, 15, 20 years ago, people wouldn't have put up with. I mean, people would have been shocked at. And it gets exposed on a daily basis, and yet people, I don't know if people are just numb or they're just living in fear or They're all on drugs, or who the hell knows what they are or aren't. But it is amazing to me how few people really understand how bad it is where you live. I don't know if people catch that part about the Imperial City, but you live very close to the stink of it. But this was never how this country was designed to be. It got bad a long time ago. It got worse a little while ago, and now it's beyond the pale. And I got a kick out of a post earlier from one of our guys that was talking about, the kicking the can down the road, saying that Senator Colburn, all said that the Republicans have already folded on the next upcoming debt ceiling. And he said, on the new upcoming debt ceiling debate in February. And, it's real interesting because he was talking about kicking the can down the road. My comment was, I'm surprised they can even see the can to kick it down the road anymore. It's been kicked down the road so far. It's off the cliff. People keep talking about in Congress, and you hear people saying, oh, we're really close to a really bad time. And I'm thinking, no, we passed that decades ago. And the question is how far will the rubber band stretch? If it wasn't for printing and borrowing, selling our children and grandchildren's future down the drain, our economy would have crashed a long time ago. And I don't think people understand that. We try to cover economic issues on this show, but it is so important to understand that you can't print and borrow indefinitely. You can't do it in your household, and you can't do it as a country, and you can't do it historically. It's always been a major issue. And regardless of politics, if we don't get our economics straight, and I don't know what the ultimate plan is. I mean, we've gone down a lot of different rabbit holes as far as, what may be the plan and a new currency, and, they want it to crash. Who knows? Who knows? It depends on which evil person you're talking about at the time. Trying aliens. To figure out what their ultimate goal is. Yeah, aliens. Satan. but the bottom line is that people need to wake up. And I know it's Christmas, and it sucks to be having this conversation a couple days before Christmas. Last year wasn't a really good Christmas. The year before was not really a good Christmas either. I think people are just freaking the hell out. I know I'm probably freaked the hell out years ago, and I've just stayed in this constant mode of, watching the war and trying to educate and communicate with people so that they get what's going on, so they make better voting decisions. Because if you don't get a new group in there that stands on the Constitution and for solid economic issues, you better learn Mandarin. And that's my answer. So we can roll from there.
Yeah, well, we're going to roll from there, and I think you're right. I mean, look, you don't get to pick when Christmas is. It's been on the Gregorian calendar on the 25th of December for centuries, over millennia, and you don't get to pick what's going on around Christmas. But it's still Christmas, so we celebrate Christmas. Yep. I mean, it is, the second most important holiday on the Christian calendar, and for those of you who aren't believers, having the origins of this country be founded on Christian philosophy. It happens to be one of the biggest holidays in our country, not to mention that it's been commercialized, so it's our economy in the service sector, which unfortunately is much larger than it should be because we have no manufacturing sector. This is a pretty important economic time of year. But the message of Christmas is that God cares so much for us that he condescended to come dwell amongst us, and he arrived as a helpless child. And, as I said in the opening, not too long after that, sometime within those first 2 years of his life, Herod, who was the tetrarch and the government authority in the region of Palestine around Bethlehem, Nazareth, where Jesus was born, was the governing authority under the Roman emperor, and he basically sent soldiers out to kill Jesus. So what you have to keep in mind is that no matter how bad things are, we always have hope. And that hope is that things are going to turn out for the best. Now, that's not some kind of optimistic, rose-colored, oh, just sit back and everything will work out just fine. It's the hope that if you get off your ass and work your ass off, things will get better. Now, they don't always get better, but your job is not to make things better. Your job is to do the work to make things better. How it turns out is never up to you. The Republican Party is dead. Conservatives are attacked across the country. It sucks, so you stand up and you fight. Will we win? Will we lose? Who knows? But the fact is that if you don't fight, you're guaranteed a loss. If you surrender before the fight begins, you never have a chance to win the fight. And that's what this is about. Now, it's been an interesting year, because if we go back a year from today, more or less, we were doing Tex and Rex's conservative Christmas carol. Tex was otherwise occupied that day, so it was you and me, Trog. In a sense, it was kind of like the first episode of Liberty's Thunder. So there's been a lot of changes. You know, a year ago, this was the Tex and Rex show, and since then, you know, people have to figure out what it is that their particular talents and their life leads them to do to make things better. And so here you and I are now on Liberty's Thunder talking about Christmas again, which is wonderful. Unfortunately, it's surrounded by debt, paper money, corruption, caving Republicans, and this really annoying thing that happened. And Chris, I find it annoying because it reveals several things. And the thing I'm talking about is the explosion and over-focus on the fact that A&E, Arts and Entertainment Cable Television Network, decided to suspend Phil Robertson from the show Duck Dynasty because of some comments he made in GQ magazine. Now, why do I find it annoying? I find it annoying because while everybody was focused on this, Chris, they appointed
NDAA.
They passed the NDAA, which, again, they have to pass if we have troops in the field, because you can only authorize troops for 2 years. But what else did they stick in it that you weren't paying attention to that curtails your liberties? That's the crazy thing. You cannot take a time out from the stuff that they are doing, because the stuff they are doing will affect you. And that's what bothered me about it. What also bothered me about it is, everybody's different opinions about this thing. I mean, look, Phil Robertson can do what he wants to do. He's an American. He's an entrepreneur. He's a grandfather. He's a Christian. And he was interviewed by GQ Magazine, and they asked him a question, and he answered it honestly, and it wasn't that big a deal. And then Baba Wawa decides that he's one of 2013's most influential people, so she kind of commands him, along with all the other fools she named in that category, to come down for their interview, and it's duck season. So Phil basically said, I'm duck hunting. So he sent his wife and one of his sons wives to the interview, and apparently Baba Wawa didn't care for that too much. The very next day, this story breaks. Are those things linked? I don't know. You do the math. But the simple fact is that when did it become a problem in this country to speak your mind? You don't agree with what he says? Don't buy GQ magazine. Don't watch A&E. But why do we have to berate and barrage and batter this guy because he has an opinion? And isn't it fascinating to you that this is what we've come to?
Well, it is. It's pretty sad. And it's only been in the last couple of years that we've really gotten to a point where you can't even speak your religious beliefs without being persecuted. And we knew this was coming. But you did make an interesting correlation of why are they bugging him now? Because when they put the Robinson family on A&E, they already knew they were strong Christians. They already knew his opinion on things, scripturally backed opinion on things. So it wasn't like anybody got a left field, blindsided by this guy. And I actually read the whole article, and it was actually, I got a kick out of it, because the guy was obviously wasn't a country boy that wrote the article, and he was kind of having fun with it, meeting with him, listening, talking about his interaction and how he was responding or feeling about the things that he was going through in this interview. But I think all people who get around that family have similar reactions because these people, I mean, these people, you know what's amazing to me, Rex? This is normal for this country since its founding. And I grew up with people like this in my family. And I'm like going, yeah, that's kind of probably why I've never really watched it that much, because I'm like, yeah, it reminds me of my granddad, you know? So it was never a real big draw for me. It was funny. My wife likes it. My son loves it. And I watched a few pieces of it, but I've never really been into it. I didn't realize how big they were. I didn't realize how big of an industry they were, or that they were the biggest thing since sliced bread on reality TV. And I didn't realize how strong of Christians they were either. Honestly, I just did not. I didn't follow it that much. But I've done a lot of research, got caught up, and I'm just like going, yep. And you know, you make a good point, because he went duck hunting instead of – you were talking about Barbara Walters, right?
Is there any other Baba Wawa that you know of?
Okay. All right. I was just making sure. There ain't no telling with you. But, you know, he went duck hunting. That's pretty important to him. He actually – a lot of people don't know this about him, but he has a master's degree in education. And he made the decision to work the river and to be a country boy and make money off the river instead of pursuing a teaching position. So duck hunting was pretty big to them, and it's obviously it's become a huge, you know, economically a fortune in their lives because of it. So it's pretty important. And I know most of these reporters and all these stiff shirt, bureaucratical, you know, upper echelon people think they're the most important thing in the world, and they're not to many of us. You know, I've never been most of us. I mean, even like for myself, I've spent a lot of time in California and living in Alaska half my life. And I used to meet a lot of movie stars, and I have never treated them any different than anybody else when I ran into them. You know, I just think that this hero worship of people because they have an audience is just unbelievable. You know what, I don't know, I'm kind of losing my thoughts here, but I agree on the NDAA thing, and it is a tricky situation because it's a huge bill, and so you have defense in there, you have the border in there, you have the, you know, dealing with drug issues, all that stuff tied into one massive bill, so it makes it very difficult, especially with the weakness in our Congress right now, for anybody to really go after that bill and tear it apart and deal with the unconstitutional parts of it, or the NSA part of it, or, you know, the corruption or the overreach and things like that. So it is a difficult one to battle at this point in our history. I wish they would, but I don't think we're going to see it happen until we get the right people in the Senate and the House, and possibly the right president in there, somebody who understands that the Constitution is the law of the land. And this whole Fourth Amendment issue with the NSA is so far beyond the pale. We got judges saying it is, and yet they passed it anyway, and they passed it quietly, and they didn't want anybody to really know it was going through the House and the Senate because they didn't want the backlash. That's why they did it. I mean, you know, otherwise they would have put it out on the table and had a real honest discussion about it, but they don't want to deal with it. They're scared to death of Obama.
Yeah, well, not only that, but I mean, this is how things are done. You know, it's all hidden. And look, you know, Phil could have done other things, not only be a teacher, but remember that he played he was quarterback for the LSU Bulldogs, and he was the starting quarterback ahead of Terry Bradshaw. So you know, white trash redneck. He's a white trash redneck. He'll tell you that. But the fact is that he could have also been a pro ball player or a college professor. This is what he chose to do, and that's what this country is supposed to be about. You're supposed to find your path, do your thing, with the minimum amount of intervention from everybody else forcing you to do other things. That's the point. And this man has done his own thing, and now all of a sudden, you know, we got the hammer of Thor coming down on him because he answered a question honestly, and it wasn't even on the TV show from which he got booted. It was in a magazine, completely unrelated. So I think that defending him is definitely laudable. It's very important. I like the fact that the Defend Phil Facebook page has, in 2 days, more likes than A&E's page has ever had. I think that's just funny. You know, this attack on Phil Robertson, the Duck Commander, struck a nerve with America because we know that when you attack him, you're attacking everyone. Now, just so that we're clear, Chris, attacking him is not only attacking people who believe in Christian principles that are outlined in the Bible and have their desire to adhere to God's commandments. This should aggravate everybody because this is basically saying that in this country you're not free to believe what you want to believe. Most people came to this country not for economic opportunity, although that's a big part of it. Most people came here for religious freedom.
Yeah, initially, there was no economy.
Exactly. So, you know, people came here for freedom of belief, freedom of thought, freedom of religion.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've got the thought police. Well, you can't say this, you can't say that, you can't do this, and you can't do that. Now, I mean, look, society does have a certain organic built-in system to kind of check certain behaviors because we don't want to spread them, you know, because everything's contagious. Whether it's positive or negative, it tends to be contagious because we're social creatures. But it is not up to the elite managers of society, the politically correct philosopher kings, to tell us how to think and what to do. So, you know, now that doesn't mean... But that doesn't mean that I think that A&E did anything that, you know, wrong in the sense that if they have a contract with Phil that says that, you know, if he does something that causes controversy somewhere else that they can suspend him, then that's well within their right. I think it's a stupid economic decision because you're going to lose a boatload of revenue when people start boycotting your station, but it's within their right. I don't think that it's something that we should demand that the government intervene in, even if there is some kind of EEOC violation because you're discriminating against somebody for their religious beliefs. But I don't like the government to get involved in this crap. But it shows you that the market can work because, you know, Cracker Barrel, for example, decided to pull certain Duck Commander stuff off their shelves and people went nuts. Well, what moron who's never actually probably entered a Cracker Barrel store, who was sitting there in the corporate office, decided to do that out of fear of retribution from the politically correct left? Well, you know, who's your customer? Who's your audience? You know, you don't alienate your customer. That's a very simple tenet of economics. And that's why the free market in economics and the free marketplace of ideas does work, provided the people in it are idiots, provided the people in it are informed. And the stupider and stupider we get because of the government schools dumbing us down further and further and the corporate media preventing us from having access to information.
And the medicine.
And the drugs. The more likely these things are going to get worse. Now, you brought up the interesting thing about, you know, they do things in under cover of darkness. And you know, we can get more into this Duck Dynasty thing, but you say they do things under the cover of darkness. That's exactly how they do it because – this government has grown to the size that it is and has permeated every aspect of your life because we weren't paying attention to what was going on because they were doing it behind closed doors and we weren't keeping an eye on them. And that's the way they like it. For example, on December 23rd, which is tomorrow, 100 years ago, December 23rd, 1913, they passed the Federal Reserve Act, and no one paid attention. And now people are waking up, thanks to the Austrian School, the Mises Institute, and most importantly, Dr. Ron Paul. People are starting to understand that the Federal Reserve is not a federal agency. It is a private banking cartel. It has no reserves. It steals from us, and it has undue control and influence over our government.
And no accountability.
Exactly. These guys don't like that. They don't like to be looked at. They don't like to be audited. They don't like the light of day on them. And that's what the Tea Party movement and the Liberty movement did. They got people aware and awake and said, whoa. I haven't been paying much attention, but while I was busy raising my kids and running my business and going to work, you people grew the government to the point where it's in every aspect of my life. You're wasting money. You're taxing me to death. You're taxing me at death. And you're regulating and piling debt upon debt that we can't afford, and I've had enough. And that's what's happening. But the thing is that there's still a lot of people who buy the crap, a lot of people who might be liberty-oriented, might be conservative, who just kind of go pull the lever for the Republicans because they're not as bad as the Democrats. Well, when you pull the lever for a Republican like Meanie Mitt Paul Ryan from Wisconsin, who's essentially the fiscal conservative flagship retard, okay, who happens to think that somehow if you increase spending $65 billion this year and decrease it $23 billion in years 9 and 10, that that's somehow a savings and a fiscally sane move. And everybody thinks that that's a good compromise. Well, the only way you can get more is if you elect more Republicans. Really, if you elect more Republicans like Paul Ryan and John Boehner and Mitch McConnell, do you think things are going to get better? Do you really think things are going to get better? That's what's going on here. We got to quit voting for people because of their team, their affiliation, their jersey, the elephant imagery that they use, and start getting people elected who believe in the Constitution, who believe in liberty, who believe in freedom, and then hold them accountable. Yeah, exactly. That's where we are, Chris. That, in the year since you and I did the show, which was Republicans Past, Present, and Future, I mean, a lot of things have changed. But we're still having the same conversation.
Yeah. Well, that's because the leadership in the House and Senate in the GOP are the same people. That's why we're still having the same conversation, because if you went back to the mid and late 90s when Newt Gingrich was Speaker of the House and he had a very liberal, powerful politician, much, much, much better politician than Barack Obama is, Bill Clinton, and Newt Gingrich, not only did he toe the line with him and hold him at bay, but he got him to come back to the middle and actually balance some budgets and cut some departments and actually paid down some of the national debt with an extremely liberal president and an adverse Senate to deal with. And so, you know, if you take almost the same, you know, and this is that thing about history and politics and civilization, is you have to be a little bit of a history student if you want to be able to get through the lies and the smoke and mirrors and the bull crap. And you look back in time, you can see very similar situations that we're living today. The difference is the Republican leadership, you know, we had the Tea Party wave in 2010 and gave them back the House and cut the supermajority out from under the legs of the Senate. And then, you know, they elected McConnell and they elected Boehner, and they turned around and caved on I don't want to put McConnell in the exact same boat on every issue, but Boehner has pretty much handed President Obama everything he's asked for with some grumpy speeches in between. That's where we're sitting. And he had the power of the purse, which is, if anybody, you know, has ever taken the time to listen to Newt explain how you use that position as a speaker with a majority in the House to your advantage, you know, to keep a leftist or a Marxist or a commie or whatever you want to call them from destroying your country economically and getting their agenda pushed through. And Newt explained it, and we're not just talking about some, you know, guy sitting in a college, you know, some professor. We're talking about a guy who has done it. And it just blows me away when I see people, especially around this last debt deal, which was not a debt deal, it was a debt surrender, or budget surrender, excuse me, the debt surrender is coming up, the next debt surrender is coming up. But, you know, people arguing with us over how we needed to compromise and how it was good that we got, you know, a budget and all this kind of crap, and I'm going, you know nothing. You know, you're taking a snapshot of the environment based on the fear you had over a government shutdown, which was not the Republicans who did it. And yet, because 99% of the media is leftist and half the people at Fox are scared to death all the time of the rest of the media, everybody tried to make it sound like it was the Republicans that did it. And it's just mind-boggling to me how little people know. You know, 95 and 98 wasn't that long ago. Do some research. Those articles are still available to read and listen to. And listen to how the Republicans battled a leftist agenda, including an attempt to create a socialized healthcare system.
Or a corporate.
And we defeated it.
Yep. No, you're absolutely right. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Chris. And those all that information, by the way, and whether you like Newt Gingrich or not is not the point. He was the speaker. Bill Clinton was the president. Things got done moving in a right direction, maybe not as far as some of us would want, maybe not quite as good as things should be, but it was definitely moving in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to know how he did it. And all that information is actually available in Chris's group, which is Coalition of Freedom on Facebook. It's also available on the show page on Facebook, Liberty's Thunder. And if you go to Liberty's Thunder on Facebook and like our page, you will get notifications in your news feed of when we're broadcasting, which is normally 10 p.m. Eastern Sundays, but sometimes we do other shows. We've been trying to do part two of our American Conservatism Defined series, but unfortunately we didn't even get to do a live show last week because one of us lost his voice and the other one carries a big club. But, oh, hold on a second, Chris. It looks like Johnny Boehner's office is calling to complain about what you said about him. Hold on. Mr. Speaker, is that you? Mr. Speaker? Johnny? Johnny, it's okay. It's okay. Chris was just pointing out, he was just pointing out that you caved and gave Obama everything. It's nothing personal. Okay, I can't deal with this now. We'll have to call you back. That guy just is unbelievable. But no, the point is that the information is there about
me. Sunshine.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you got to learn how things were done. I mean, and last week we were supposed to get into this, you know, Ryan Cave budget sequester thingy. We'll probably do that. If not next week, the week after, it'll still be relevant because we got this reinstatement of the debt ceiling that ain't going to get reinstated in January, February anyway. But and fiscal issues are clearly important. But the important thing to understand is that when you're fighting as the minority, okay, and yes, the Republicans and the Democrats are in this together, so there's really just one party. It's the party of the politicians and the bankers and then the rest of us Americans. But when you have a two-party system, when you have a two-party system, and the two-party system sucks, but it is what we have. Do you want to change it? Yes. The way you change it, you don't just go vote third party. Now, this is coming from a guy who didn't vote for the Democrat or the Republican in the last election, but or the one this year actually. But the simple fact is that this year I did vote for one of them, The important thing to understand is that you can't break the duopoly just by voting for an alternate party. It doesn't work that way. First of all, because they control all the precincts. Second of all, because they control all the access to the ballots and the debates and the media. But mostly because as much as Americans have woken up, not enough have woken up. And that's your job. You're awake. You're aware that there's a problem with the duopoly. You've got to get others informed and get them awake. That's the key. In the meantime, you got a toehold of real conservatives and real libertarians in the crappy Republican Party. You got to grow their ranks while you dismantle the duopoly from, you know, the ground up. But in the meantime, you have to put people there in Washington who are going to start rolling this thing back. It ain't going to get undone all at once. But you can't just wait till election day to do it. You got to get people awake now. You got to get people aware now, and you've got to find out who you support, who's actually doing a good job, not just the ones with slick voting records or nice commercials, but really doing a good job, and then break apart the duopoly from the ground up. That's the key. It's a matter of political reality, not what you would like it to be. So this allegedly opposition party, which is there is a minority in this opposition party that is actually opposition. The rest of them are complicit. Their tools for slowing down this horrible statist agenda have just been taken away by their so-called buddies and party leadership. Because by passing this two-year budget, we've now eliminated every point of contention and stalling that will occur in D.C. for the next 24 months, which are the opportunities to get real compromise and to get things done in a good way.
Power
and those
the
tools
purse.
Have all been, those tools have all been thrown away by Paul Ryan and John Boehner and Mitch McConnell, and that's a serious, serious problem. And it's the problem that's been going on with the Republicans pretty much since World War II. Pretty much since World War II. Chris, you want to comment anything about that before we take kind of a break? But it's going to be interesting because I didn't upload any clips today because it's kind of a Christmas show and we're just having fun, you know, happy, happy, happy talking Duck Commander. But I did manage to grab a couple of little segments from last year's Christmas show, which I thought were worth re-airing because we listened to establishment Republicans from the past, who sound a lot more like Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich, and they sound like John Boehner, Mitch McConnell, or little mini Mitt Paul Ryan.
No, I'm good. I just think that this is a really important topic, and you just kind of breezed over it again. This budget deal was not a deal. It wasn't just about a budget. It was giving up the power of the purse and the Republican power for the next 2 years, going into midterm elections. Right after Obamacare gets implemented and our whole system is crunching and the Republicans give up their power. And then Harry Reid does his nuclear option in the Senate. And it's just, I mean, there are days, Rex, that I look at these people and I think, what does the NSA have on these guys? Because nobody could be this gutless when our whole system is designed to give the minority party or if you have a majority in the House, these specific powers to help balance out the overreach of the alternate party. And they gave it up. And maybe we need to detail that out sometime. You know, take 15, 20 minutes in one of our shows and detail out how that bill was done and what was in it and how they did it. But, it's really important to understand what the Republicans – and I don't want to say Republicans, all of them, because not all of them voted for it, and
exactly.
Definitely not all of them voted for it in the Senate. You know, about a third of the Republicans in the House and the Senate are trying to do what we hired them to do. If you could add another third to that in 2014, we'd rock and roll for the last 2 years of this guy's presidency – and turn it into a real lame duck, you know, situation, which is what we need if you don't want to see what you've seen the last 5 years continue on. Because I don't know how we're going to recover from three more years of this.
We need to do something about it. We got one more show in 2013, and keep in mind, 2014 has already begun. The midterms are well underway, and before that, you've got primary battles, both. The establishment trying to primary real conservatives and libertarians like Justin Amash, and also, you know, Tea Party and Liberty Movement candidates trying to derail the establishment losers like Matt Bevin taking out Mitch McConnell in Kentucky. This is very important stuff, and yeah, I do think we need to discuss the budget because showing how the, you know, publicly conservative Republicans not only caved on a terrible budget, but actually gave up all of the tools that they had in order to slow down the growth of the state and the destruction of our economy is a very important point, and maybe we'll do it next week or at least the week after. But, yeah, the thing to keep in mind is this, quote, budget deal wasn't good for anybody except establishment rhinos, the Democrats, and Obama. It wasn't good for anybody else. And we can get into the details of it, but the thing to keep in mind is that it was simply a capitulation of the powers and tools available to the true opposition to the statist agenda, the Federal Reserve, the military-industrial complex. It's all been wiped away. Now, that doesn't mean that the fight is over. You never stop fighting. I mean, unless you want to lose, you don't stop fighting. But it is important to know what a terrible blow Boehner, Ryan and McConnell hit us with. And the thing is that you get accused when you talk like this. You get accused by people who call themselves conservatives or even in some cases libertarians who are really just Republican cheerleaders who don't think about anything other than the fact that the Republicans are less bad than the Democrats. So I don't even know if that's true, okay? But what I do know is true.
Who you're talking about.
Well, yeah. But what I do know is true is that this situation is absolutely horrible. And if you look at real conservative principles, and we did a whole show on it, American Conservatism Defined. We went over Russell Kirk's principles, and we're going to do some more of those in the future. So make sure you like our Facebook page, Liberty's Thunder. In the Militia of Liberty's Thunder, which is our group on Facebook, I post all the clips and articles that we have from the show, and I just posted a link to this show from last year, from which I'm going to play a 10-minute clip. Now, it'll sound like Chris and I are talking because, well, it is Chris and I talking. But this is from a year ago, and it's important because
weird.
it shows you how traditionally Republicans have been conservative. But in the last 60 or so years, other than Reagan and Gingrich, so other than 1980, 84, and 94, they haven't been conservative, and you've been played for a fool. But when you get attacked by Republicans who say they're conservative because you're speaking like this, you need to know your history to know what the Republican Party says that it stands for. It says it stands for conservative principles in the Constitution, but they don't act that way. Some of them do, and we need more of them. But let's take a listen in the Wayback Machine to Christmas 2012.
Nation.
If we look, yeah, you know, all that kind of garbage. And then you can go to an interesting fact is that after Taft, the next Republican to hold office in the White House was Warren Harding. Important because a lot of people, especially Gingrich conservatives or Kaine conservatives or Perry conservatives, I guess, or even Little Ricky Santorum conservatives, they pride themselves on being in the Reagan mold, right? But they've never really looked back at the party because I don't think that they know where true conservatism was. In fact, I think it was we played the clip last week from Rosie O'Donnell. Not Rosie O'Donnell, that other lesbian, Larry O'Donnell. Is that his name? Larry or Chris? I don't know, whatever. Anyway, we played that clip where he said that, that Reagan couldn't win the GOP primary today. Well, I would agree with that. He couldn't win because they would marginalize him faster than they did last time. They tried to derail him in 1980, but I think this time they'd succeed the way they did with Paul and Gingrich. But he also said the Republicans have forgotten who even, Reagan is and what he did. And I will agree with that wholeheartedly. So I think it's important to go back in time. And in fact, I'm going to go back, so far back, Chris, that you and I are going to find ourselves not in the 20th century, but in the 19th century. And we're going to go back to President McKinley, and we're going to listen to his 1896 campaign speech. Not the whole thing. I got about a minute of it. So here's President McKinley in 1896 while he was campaigning.
My fellow citizens, recent events have imposed upon the patriotic people of this country a responsibility and a duty greater than that of any since the Civil War. Then it was a struggle to preserve the government of the United States. Now it is a struggle to preserve the financial honor of the government. Our creed embraces an honest dollar, an untarnished national credit, adequate revenues for the uses of the government, protection to labor and industry, preservation of the home market, and reciprocity, which will extend our foreign market. Upon this platform we stand and submit its declaration to the sober and considerate judgment of the American people.
Now, I know that audio was a little hard for us to handle because, it is 1896, folks, so that was like an...
Did he really talk like that? That's really him?
Yeah, that's an actual recording that was done by Thomas Edison on one of his, wax recording devices. I think it was even before, vinyl or anything else was used in the phonographs, and that was actually McKinley. So we really went to the past.
Interesting way of speaking, didn't he?
Yeah, I would argue that it probably wasn't that unusual in the 19th century. Just a little different to our ears. Sort of like when you read the Constitution, some of the words that they use seem a little flowery for us today, but the fact is that if we understand it in context, it's very powerful stuff. What I found fascinating about this is that he was talking about an honest dollar and the financial honor of government, meaning a government that spends within its means. That's a pretty Republican principle going back, at least that's, as far as 1896.
That's why they shot him.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
they shot him because he refused to, he stuck to the gold standard and he refused to let them pull an inflationary maneuver on the economy. Did you ever, did you study that?
Yeah, giddy up. I mean, you nailed it. It's absolutely true, and it's kind of interesting when we say, you know, they shot him. Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is that at the time, and look, this is the thing about the banksters. They use, always play both sides of the equation. They win no matter which way you go, and so they hedged that the gold standard may remain, okay? But they were hoping to promote Jennings, Bryan, and the Democratic Party with quote, a silver-based money as opposed to gold-based money. Now, I'm not necessarily opposed to bimetallism, but it, silver allows for more inflation than gold because it is generally easier to get. In fact, no one really goes mining for silver. You usually go mining for gold, but along the way you find silver. So there was some confusion at the time, but basically the other side, quote, the populist side, was actually inflationist. And the gold standard was to keep the dollar honest. Now, the Morgans also were interested in getting behind the gold standard, but not with any intent of keeping it as a gold standard. They were intending to set up a central bank, take all the gold, and then base their fiat paper regime on the gold, which they didn't do in 1896, but it wasn't that many years later that they did it. In fact, they went for that secret meeting at Jekyll Island, Georgia in 1910. So when we think 1896 to 1910, that's just, you know, 14 years. Where were we 14 years ago? Oh, that's right. The year, you know, 1999. What did we do in 1999? We ousted Newt Gingrich. Why would we do that? Oh, the Republicans ousted Newt Gingrich because they wanted to spend money, and what did they do since then? They went on a spending binge. So it's pretty fascinating, but we really got to think about that because, in reality, the Republican Party was kind of more a central bank party. There was kind of a shift here, you know, with McKinley to hold up a gold standard, which I think is a pretty important point. So that's where we are in the past, and it gets even more interesting because, you know, we talk about sound money, right? Why do we talk about sound money? Because that is the way we measure our growth, our wealth, our interactions. And, of course, if the dollar is being inflated, that means that someone's counterfeiting and taking the wealth away. And we know who they are. Principally, it is, you know, obviously the Federal Reserve, Wall Street bankers, government contractors, chiefly in the military-industrial complex that another Republican, Dwight D. Eisenhower, warned us about. So generally, when we move away from sound money, we also move towards foreign intervention. Now, keep in mind, 1896, okay, you got to put things in perspective when you're talking history. 1896 is barely 3 decades from the end of the war for Southern independence. So, you know, when we think back to Vietnam, okay, that's the way these people thought back to, quote, the Civil War. You know, it wasn't that long ago. So, you know, That was a war that was, you know, not fun. 600,000 Americans died. It ravaged the country, possibly lost us our state's sovereignty. And,
yeah, I was
going to
say, we wrote to democracy.
Yeah. So, you know, pretty interesting stuff. But nevertheless, that was essentially, even though I believe it was a war between two countries, the United States of America and the Confederate States of America, we refer to it in the vernacular as a civil war. But it was kind of an internecine conflict. It was an American conflict. We did little in the way of foreign conflicts at the time. You know, in 1776, we evicted a foreign government from our shores, the British government, did it again in 1812. So, you know, 1896, we still hadn't entered into that age of foreign interventionism. But we were getting there. And we were getting there pretty damn fast because we were starting to move away from sound money. And when you move away from sound money, you generally have to not only inflate, excuse me, but you also get into foreign entanglements because, you know, that's what banksters do. They want mercantilist trade, you know, corporatist trade. So that's what they're looking for. And here's an interesting Republican past. This is President Taft. Chiefly on foreign policy. So just listen to this, and we'll see if we can link the two. It's pretty interesting.
to admit that war has accomplished much in the progress of the world. I'm willing to admit that there are certain crises in the forward march of Christian civilization that perhaps could not have been met in any other way than by the sword. I'm willing to admit that war develops certain heroic traits in men and furnishes a test for the evidence of the highest character. Perhaps, too, it trains and disciplines people. But the other side of the picture justifies the prayer of every man, of every civilized man, that war should be abolished, and that the suffering, cruelty, corruption, and demoralization that follow in its train should be, as far as we can bring it about, lifted as a burden from the human race. It is our duty to take every legitimate and proper step we can to persuade the nations of the world to settle their controversies in some other way. They are looking to us as a country independent of entangling alliances, separated from all possible attacks by two wide oceans, rich, powerful, and in a situation where nobody can accuse us of being afraid of any nation or of taking this step because we are afraid of war if war were a necessity. It is the common people of the world that are interested in this business. They know when we have war, it is they that have to bear the burden. It's their sisters and mothers and daughters that have to wait, trembling, to hear the news from the battlefield to learn whether their dear ones have bitten the dust. It's the great mass of the plain people that Lincoln loved so well that have to stand the brunt of war. They do not have the glory of coming home with the gold lace and the feathers and all that falls to the leader. They are not elected presidents because they happen to be successful. They know the demoralization that follows in the wake of war. We should lead the way, and all doubts as to our constitutional authority should be resolved in favor of our stepping forward as a nation with the power, the wealth, the fortune, and the opportunity that God has given us to help along the movement of Christian progress toward permanent.
Those guys are geniuses. They sound just like us. Just kidding. What I found really powerful there was you heard from two Republican American presidents expressing conservative principles. And the last time we had that was with Ronald Reagan. And before that, it was nobody except possibly the Democrat, John F. Kennedy, odd as that seems. It's interesting to me that we're talking here about a strong national defense without neocon adventurism. Oh, wait, that's because the neocons hadn't infiltrated the Republican Party yet. Maybe that's why the Republicans were actually conservative. And yet these days, they're trying to paint the picture that the people who want a strong national defense without all of this foreign adventurism brought on by the neocons are the infiltrators, the extreme right, the legislative arsonists, the Tea Party extremists, the Rand Paul isolationists, when in fact these are sound conservative principles of a strong defense without the world's policemen, which we can neither afford in blood or treasure. And that's what you have to get back to. You have to realize that we are not the infiltrators into the Republican Party. They are the ones calling us names, the ones calling the shots, the ones at the RNC now, telling us that we're the new extreme wing that's pulling the party to the right. Well, no, we're not the new extreme wing pulling the party to the right. We're trying to get the party back to where it says that it is. We're the ones who are placing the honest positions of conservatism square in the middle of the national debate, and these infiltrators from the left are the ones moving it in the other direction. Am I right, Chris? Maybe I'm just talking to myself. Anyway, I found it interesting that the he used the word Christian civilization in reference to America. Now, could you imagine a politician saying that today? He'd be treated just like Phil Robertson. You know, he'd be a bigot. He'd be non-inclusive. He'd be backwards. But the fact is that the principles of this country are based on Christian principles, Christian philosophy. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to be a Christian believer. That's your relationship, you know, between you and Jesus, if you have one, and if not, that's your right. I'd recommend you try it. But you have to appreciate the fact that the principles of liberty, as we understand them, that this country was founded on, came through 2,000 years of trial and error in Christian civilization. But a president can't speak like that today. He'd be pilloried like Phil Robertson. You there, Chris?
Now, okay, you know what happened?
When?
You're going to get kicked out of this. Well, when you said, is that right, Chris? I was waiting for me to speak in the recording. I didn't know we had transitioned off the recording. I was like, where'd I go?
That's funny.
So I was just typing you a note in chat saying, are we live? Are we back?
Yeah,
are we
live.
Back to the show? We were doing recordings.
Yeah.
No,
we've gone from 2012 to 2013.
Okay, we're back. Oh, my God, I feel like, what was that movie with Bill
Groundhog
Murray?
Groundhog Day?
No, the other one, the Chris the Scrooged.
Oh, okay.
Jumping back and forth. That was a great movie. No, you know, I think that history is important and understanding, you know, I think one of the things that this country is doing, and what I mean by this country, I mean the elites, the media, the left and the right, both the Democrats and the Republicans, are trying to change the culture and traditions and history. They don't teach history anymore. And when you go to the news, if you don't know what's going on or what happened in the past or how, you know, just like the whole 95-96 situation with the shutdown with Gingrich and Clinton, if you don't know the history of it, then you're bound to listen to the news and go, oh, my God, those bad Republicans, look what they did. They didn't do anything. They were trying to save your butt. They were trying to save this country from a debacle of health care, of this affordable health care, Obamacare, which is ripping the guts out of this country. We don't even know what the law is. He's changed it so many times, and he just did another little administrative fix illegally, unconstitutionally, changed the law again. And you know, people like say, well, it's the law of the land. Well, the law that is being implemented on this country right now is not the law that the Supreme Court made their judgment on. I mean, it's changed so many times. We are so fast past reality, and if you as a citizen are not educated on the past, and I think it was really neat. I remember doing that program and going through those people, and I was doing research as we were playing clips and talking on those different presidents, you know, and kind of catching up. And that's what I've been doing for the last couple of years of my life, is a lot of research, because for one, the country seems like it's changing, but is it really changing, or is just the dialogue changing? It just seems like when you go to the news or you go to the politician or you listen to President Obama the other day talking, you would think we were in a whole different era. You wouldn't think that the NSA didn't happen or the IRS didn't happen or Obamacare didn't crash, or, you know, the way he was talking, you would think, like, everything's, well, it's not, you know, everything's pretty good, and, yeah, we made a few mistakes here and there, but, yeah, you know, I get up every day and give it my best, you know, for the people. If you didn't know what was going on and you just heard that speech, like if they plucked you off of Mars, you know, and stuck you in front of a TV, the tone of that and the Q&A, which was a joke, the Q&A of that, you would think that everything was like kind of like the mid to late 90s in America. You know, when we were actually making money and prospering and the housing market was booming and the dot-com market was booming and, yeah, we made a few mistakes along the way, but, you know, yeah, look, everybody's doing pretty good. That's the tone of what they're trying to tell you. It's just like every time you hear a stock market update, you're like, boy, if you drive down the street in my neighborhood, you ain't going to see that, you know? And I mean, it's just, we have become American Idol on steroids. And with the MTV, I watched MTV launch, and I watched how they started turning everybody into a superstar, you know, musicians and actors and sports figures and, you know, the lifestyle, the rich and famous. And they just took us into this fake world, you know. And while everybody was staring at this, you know, with their eyeballs bulging out, drooling about, God, wouldn't it be great to be rich and famous, they screwed our country up. They did it with the dot-bomb crash, which never had a chance to recover because of the manipulation they did in the market and the housing market and the bubble that was being created at that point. And when it crashed, I mean, if you study the people you and I study, they knew this was coming. And the only people who seem not to know it was coming are the people who are supposed to be responsible to the country. Or they knew it was coming and they just didn't give a shit as long as they got reelected. I don't know, Rex. I mean, I don't know how sick and perverted these people really are, but the end result of their choices and actions are where we're sitting today, and we're in a massive bubble right now, and when this one pops, the housing bubble popping will look like a bump in the road with all this printing and borrowing and borrowing and printing and printing and borrowing and lying and launching monster programs, you know, to take over a sixth of our economy. And, I mean, it's insane. If you think the website, the Obamacare rollout was a debacle, you ain't seen nothing yet, because that's how all of government runs.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you think about this stuff, and Merry Christmas while we're at it. Oh, my gosh. Anyway,
yeah, well, that
I don't
is
know
how
if I got off topic.
Runs. No, that's how the government runs. Which is why the government shouldn't do a lot of things that it does, and it should only stick to the things it's allowed to do within the 18 enumerated powers outlined in the Constitution. But when you say, do they know or do they not know? Well, look at the whitewashing of Janet Yellen's record that they did to make her sound like some kind of genius who foresaw these things happening and how she's going to be a more capable manager than Ben Bernanke. First of all, in her own, I mean, like, these people think that we don't have the internet, I guess. They think we only watch television, which is a one-way stream. But we've got the information that tells us clearly that she stated that she had no idea this stuff was coming, which makes her incompetent or, if she knew about it, complicit.
Or a liar.
Either way, the thing that you have to understand is the whole thing is a show, because the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board isn't in charge. It is the governor of the Federal Reserve Branch in New York, ironically on Liberty Street in Manhattan. That's who calls the shots, and actually it's whoever owns the Fed, which is that person's boss. But the thing that's amazing is people somehow think, well, you know, but the government has oversight. The president, appoints somebody, and then they go through a Senate confirmation, blah, blah, blah. What happens is the Federal Reserve gives the president a list of people, and they say, here, these are the 10 losers that we've decided can be the obfuscating mouthpiece of our diabolical economic policies. You get to pick one of these 10. And somehow that's oversight. You know, that's like everybody screaming about, you know, GMOs. Oh, GMOs is going to kill everybody. They're destroying the food supply. Oh, but let's just take the guys who run the companies like Monsanto and give them all the power to control every food supply through the FDA. That's how crazy this is. And we're sitting back here thinking, like you said, you know, American Idol on steroids. We'll do something about it in November. We might not make it till November. You got to do something about it now. Did you call the Senate about the Yellen confirmation? Did you even listen to what Rand Paul was saying when he was trying to get movement on the audit the Fed bill tied in with her confirmation? You know, why did Harry Reid nuke the Senate to pack the D.C. Circuit Court so that when all the challenges to the EPA and Obamacare come down, it'll be his judges ruling on it in the NSA, right? So, you know, Why are we trying to take away the power of people like Rand Paul to filibuster? Because someone like Rand Paul might say, okay, you want this woman confirmed as the next chair? That's fine. I'll give that to you. You're the president. You picked her. You want her. That's fine. But I want the Fed audited. And that's the kind of crazy stuff that's going on. And then what the Republicans turn around and tell you is, well, you know, we can only do so much until you give us the Senate and the presidency. So what they're saying basically is, we're not going to do anything right. We're not going to do anything for the Constitution. We're not going to do anything to stop the economic disaster. We're not going to do anything to curtail your to end the curtailing of your liberties until you put us in charge. Well, that's the kind of crap they gave us before, and ever since they got rid of Gingrich in 99, they haven't done anything good on any of those things. They built the DHS. They created, they passed the Patriot Act. They got us into Afghanistan and Iraq. They started with the illegal wiretapping.
Five debt ceiling increases in
right
in that two terms.
Yeah, so they did all those horrible things, and then all of a sudden Obama comes and puts those terrible things on steroids, and now they're saying, re-elect us, we'll fix it. Well, you guys broke it in the first place before Obama got elected. TARP happened under Bush. You know, I had to abandon free market principles to save the free market. I mean, give me a break. You people got to wake up, and you got to put the pressure on these guys, and you got to do it every day. You got to do it all the time, in season, out of season, Christmas, Easter, whatever. It's never going to stop because liberty requires perpetual vigilance. You cannot sit back on your ass and shirk the responsibility of liberty if you want to hold onto it. It is a duty. It is work. It isn't free. Now, what do you think about the fact? Go ahead. No, you go.
Well, I was just going to make the point of when our founding fathers put this system together, they meant for the federal government to be very limited in scope and have specific duties and powers, because they already, I mean, you know, I think it's that, you know, that historical conversation again. You know, we've had 10,000 years of civilized history, and so there's a lot of things to learn and glean from. You know, and you can go right up to Greece, you know, the growth of Greece and the fall of Greece and the growth of Rome and the fall of Rome, you know, right on through the journey. Our founding fathers were not without knowledge or wisdom or history to study. They knew what totalitarianism was. They knew what greed is. They knew what, you know, the personality of people who get in power and why they get in power. You know, these aren't charity workers. You know, politicians come to Washington, at least many of them claim they do, to fix things, and then they get in there and they, you know, forget their morals and their principles and their party platforms, and they become, what was that, Lady of the Night that you used earlier? You know what I mean? And so when you look at this situation, this is why you do not hand unlimited power to a handful of men and women. You don't do it, and that's why this government was set up the way it was set up. And I think it's interesting. I wonder how many people even understand that the federal government, you know, the chicken or the egg, which came first, federal government of the states. The states were 13 independent colonies or states or entities or little mini countries who built the federal government to facilitate certain things that they needed done with trade and defense and things like that. And it was very limited in scope. Now you had the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, and the Federalists wanted that big central power system. The Anti-Federalists were the state sovereignty mindset that said, leave me the hell alone. We left all that behind in Europe, and I want to, you know, grow my food and run my factory or my plantation and trade around the world and do what I do. And I don't want this totalitarian system. I want a system where we, the people, are the sovereign. And it was a very unique mindset. And, of course, the Greeks initially, you know, kind of created this unique citizen government. But, of course, they went to hell in a handbasket like everybody else because they got all the power, all the business behind the politics. And next thing you know, the people are left out in the cold. And it happens over and over and over and over. In fact, there's a book you can read that goes through case study after case study after case study showing what happens when government has too much power. And it's called the Old Testament. You know? I mean, it's amazing how much information is out there to show you why you do not hand over all this power to a handful of people, you know, because yeah. I don't know what it is about modern mankind, you know, and I don't know if that's politically correct, I don't give a crap, but modern human beings, okay, that we think that mankind is different than it was 100, 200, 300, 1,000, or 10,000 years ago. The nature of man's basic primary points that corrupt our nature are the same, and they never go away, and they will never change, and you will never get them out. You will never breed them out of civilization. It is an inherent in our nature. And so you have to create systems that check and balance that power so it doesn't get out of control. And that's what our founding fathers set up, and we're at the absolute pinnacle of what they warned us about. It's happening right now. Actually, it happened years ago, but it's happening right now in this Christmas season, and it's both parties, and you no longer have a champion fighting for you. And I got to be careful when I say that, because there's some great people in government fighting for, and in fact, there's a lot of Democrats fighting for the civil liberties and the NSA issue. You know, you've got, there are people who have pet issues, you know, that are fighting for those things. They still believe in that Bill of Rights. That Bill of Rights is so abused. If you took each one of those individual components and read through them and then thought about your country, thought about whether it's freedom of speech, freedom of religion, you know, there you go right back to the Duck Dynasty issue, you know, with, you know, Phil Robertson and any of this stuff, you look at each one of these components and you can go, wow, those are really being stomped on right now by the people we elect into power. These are not dictators. They are elected, and we lend them power to run the country under certain constitutional guidelines. And I would say 95% of everything they're doing is unconstitutional.
Yeah,
and I may be off. Maybe it's 90%.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe more than that. I think you nailed and you brought up a lot of important stuff. The one thing to keep in mind is that
I was babbling.
When we elect these people, right, and they do these things beyond the Constitution and this abuse of power, that's actually worse than being born into a kingdom or a dictatorship or somewhere else where you don't have any influence over government, because then whatever they do is really on them. But when you are participating in the process, you're essentially giving it sanction, which makes these dictators worse, because they're running under the pretext that this is the will of the people. Remember, Adolf Hitler was elected chancellor. It wasn't a coup. And so you have to realize that just because you have the power to go vote every November doesn't mean that there aren't people there trying to use that power against you. And what you said about human anthropology, that, you know, we are by nature corrupt. Well, now, what you're bringing up there is a Christian view of human nature. And not everybody in this country is a Christian, so why should they accept that premise? Well, you accept that premise because that's the premise under which our government is founded. The founding fathers, whether they were Christians or deists or whatever else they might have been, although I'm fairly confident most of them were Christians and a couple of them were deists, understood the nature of man and the nature of power. And Lord Acton said, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And Heinlein said that power attracts the corrupt. And so the founding fathers gave us a system in which they distrusted themselves. Remember, these guys weren't a community club or a Masonic lodge, although some of them might have been Masons. These were representatives from all 13 colonies who got together and to form a government. They had to actually do compromising, not capitulating like Ryan and Boehner and McConnell, but actual compromising. And what they all understood, though, was that whoever is put into these positions of power will have a tendency to dominate unless we put in systems to limit their ability to do that, and that's what was done. The problem with those systems is that they can be easily circumvented if no one holds them accountable, and that's you. Now, these days, you isn't every single American, and it won't be every single American ever. It won't even be a majority for many, many years. But a loud minority, a loud vocal minority of principled Americans who believe in constitutionally limited government, the grassroots, have to band together. You need to quit having arguments over your differences, find your common ground, and go forward and reclaim the ground which belongs to us, which is a limited government. So instead of attacking your conservative friend because he's not for legalizing pot smoking or sodomy, or instead of attacking your libertarian friend because he wants a far less aggressive foreign policy than you do, it's just stupid. Because what happens then is that the Democrat socialists and the Marxists and the totalitarians and the corporatists and the statists keep winning. And the more people become dependent upon them for food and energy and shelter and health care, the less likely they'll ever get rid of them. And we're getting very, very close to that tipping point if we're not already there. You have to be the one who stops it. And that's why at this time when we're talking about the hope of Christmas, you have to realize that that hope doesn't materialize itself unless you get off your ass and do something. You know, Jesus wants you to celebrate Christmas, to bend a knee, to appreciate his birth the way that the three kings did. But then he wants you to get up and go do something with that, not just, you know, sit back and say, oh, well, I can't be involved. I'll just go vote in November. You have to do more than that. And that's really the key point. Now, what I found fascinating in that little clip that we played there, Chris, is the president said Christian civilization. Now, can you imagine a president talking like that today without being treated like Phil Robertson is?
Yeah, it's changed pretty fast. I mean, you know, President Bush was a Christian, and, you know, they chipped at him and made fun of him here and there, but, you know, the nation was still... I don't know how to explain it. You know, it's changed pretty fast in the last 4 or 5 years. And it's a plan, and there's a reason, and there's people behind it, and there's strategies behind it, and they're working on it. And I think the saddest part of it is, I mean, I've said this before, and sometimes I don't know if people understand it, but I, you know, men who get into power positions because they want to do bad things, I don't fault them. I fault the people that put them there and put up with them. That's the problem because, you know, whenever you look at a totalitarianism situation, whether it be Hitler or Stalin or whatever the case may be, you know, the masses far outnumber the handful of people in power. And so you have to choose to be a sheep. And you made a very important point and one that's always been a frustration to me is looking at, you know, and I say this all the time, sometimes sarcastically, sometimes, you know, in anger, sometimes in just because I'm curious, but where are the churches? You know, why is it that it takes a Phil Robinson to rile up the country? You know, I did, I don't know, my son and I did like 13 radio shows going into the, on the Second Amendment, coming out of the Newtown travesty, because I knew the left was going to use it, and it was going into the holidays. We were doing these shows. We spent hundreds of hours of research behind the time, unpaid time, to do these shows to educate people so that they had the tools and the information, because I knew that President Obama was going to use that as a tool against the Second Amendment, and it was frustrating to see how long it took for good people to stand up and fight back. And the thing is if people would fight back all the time, our country wouldn't be where it's at. Whether it be conservatives, and I hear all these stories of things going on in their school systems, and I'm thinking, where in the hell are the parents? You know, those poor little girls being traumatized by that school system in Colorado that decided to allow a boy because he thinks he's a girl to be inside their locker room while they're trying to, you know, go to the bathroom and shower and be naked. I mean, I'm like, what the hell? I mean, am I in some kind of a freaking sci-fi movie? I mean, when I was in my 20s and the 30s and my kids were young kids in school, I was involved in the damn school. You know, I was involved in things. When I saw things out of track, we were involved. And I wonder, where are the parents? And then the other thing I asked, back to what I was saying a minute ago, where in the hell are the churches? You're the Christian community in this nation outnumber the rest of them. This is tyranny of the minority. And yet they have so much power. They only have power because you refuse to speak and act. And you don't have to be some kind of radical. All you got to do is stand up. And I've said this my whole life, and I'm not preaching boycotting or anything else like that, but you vote with your dollar. I do not spend money with corporations who do things I don't agree with. Well, the left does it all day, every day, you know, to destroy any kind of conservative or Christian business. Why in the hell don't conservatives and Christians vote with their money and make choices about who they support? Because money creates power, creates politicians, creates the environment for people to impose their will on you. So why wouldn't you, this is back to that economics conversation, why wouldn't you make a decision to support businesses that support your ideals or political beliefs? I mean, to me, that's just a no-brainer. And I don't mean to be, you know, I don't want to make people feel bad with the way I'm saying that, but it's frustrating because we don't have to be where we're at. We didn't have to get to this point. Be a citizen government, and you're not going to change your country hiding in your church and praying for somebody like Phil Robinson to come along and stand up for what they believe. Everybody should be standing up for what they believe.
Absolutely.
Sorry.
And that's,
I got off there.
No, I think you're right. And regarding the Duck Commander analogy, it's very powerful. I mean, look, again, it's fascinating to me that in 2013, in order to get Americans interested in doing something about political correctness, you need a retired duck call maker on a reality TV show to get you all riled up. But I guess that's where we are, so we go with it. The amazing thing to me is you look what happened, right? A&E suspended him. They didn't fire him. Why? Because they want the opportunity to bring him back because they're aware that they might get repercussions for this. Remember something, A&E created the Duck Dynasty show because they were hoping that these long-bearded millionaire rednecks would be something to put on TV to make fun of Christians and conservatives. And what ended up happening is it became the number one show, and it's the show that A&E got for their revenue, but it's not the show that they wanted. And the fact that it is such a powerful show permits Phil and Willie and Jason and the whole Robertson family to actually demand certain aspects of content that A&E doesn't want. A&E didn't want them to have guns on the show. The show about duck hunters, but they didn't want guns on the show, right? And this is a proud Christian family, but they didn't want them to pray in Jesus' name at the end of the episodes. Well, because the show is so popular, A&E can't afford to do these things, so they had to allow those things to happen. That shows you the power, like you said, of the marketplace where you vote with your dollars. And then look at what happened with this move, right? Under Armour supports the Robertson family. Their sales are going through the roof. Walmart didn't pull anything off their shelves from the Duck Dynasty gear, and sales are going well. Cracker Barrel decides to pull some merchandise. Their customers go apeshit, and now Cracker Barrel has reversed that position. So you see what happens when in large numbers you come out and you stand up for what you believe in? Things do, in fact, change. Now, the one thing to keep in mind here is that the Duck Commander's free speech rights were not violated because GQ isn't the government, A&E isn't the government, and this was done strictly on the part of private companies. Now, here's the interesting thing, though. Why did they do it? Because they are slaves to political correctness. And let's be clear about something. When that First Amendment disappears, finally, it's not because of some law that the government passed. It's because in our culture, we've given it up. And that's what happens. It's when private businesses and individuals start censoring exactly the way that the elites want them to do, and then it'll just be easy to wipe out the First Amendment because you no longer need it because no one actually exercises free speech or freedom of the religion. And, yeah. and so you have to understand something. If you don't want corruption in your government, you don't want corruption in your business enterprises, then you have to root out the corruption in yourself. You have to root out the corruption in your community. You have to root out the corruption in the culture. And I think that's what this Duck Commander thing has brought to a head, that we have a culture that won't tolerate any kind of dissent of what's currently acceptable behavior. And the thing you have to understand is that this permeates on the right and the left. It permeates Christian mindset and the conservative mindset as well, because guess what, Mr. Ricky Santorum? You do not get to impose your Christian values on America by law. The good Christian stands up and gives witness to the truth and convinces people in the culture. And if your culture is right, then your government and your business will be right. But you don't make your government and your business right by imposing from business and government on the culture. That's what the left does. It's not freedom. You have to do it yourself. So instead of voting for people like Rick Santorum because he has good Christian values and you think he's going to pass good laws to make people good Christians, how about you stand up and you convince somebody about sin and you convince them to give up the bad behavior? That's exactly what Phil said. I mean, everybody's talking about how offensive what he said and the words he used. This is Lee's thunder. We're radioactive and offensive crap flies out of my mouth on a regular basis. Which is why we don't have any sponsors other than you. You're the only people who get our show out there because sponsors won't touch this show. But what did he say that was so offensive? In his belief, in Phil Robertson's belief, homosexual behavior is wrong. Now, he's not saying that he wants to do anything about it through law. He's not saying he wants to force anybody to engage or not engage in it. He's simply saying, it's not for me. I think it's wrong. And because I love these people, I don't want them to engage in that behavior. Now, if someone wants to engage in that behavior anyway, Phil didn't stop them. He simply gave them reason to think about not doing it. And that's where you win in the marketplace of ideas. You're not by forcing people to do things. Sorry, I went off.
No, I was just chuckling. I was waiting for – I thought you were going to go off and read.
I'll read it. Let me read it. This is exactly what Phil said in GQ magazine, by the way, which is not owned by A&E, and it wasn't part of the Duck Dynasty television
Make sure when you read it, you read the second part that clarifies his position on it.
Well, let me read the first part, which I have, and then if I miss the second part, we'll dig it up. But basically, look, the words he used here are anatomical references, so I don't know why anybody freaks out about them. But he said, it seems like to me a vagina as a man would be more desirable than a man's anus. That's just me. I'm just thinking. There's more there. She's got more to offer. I mean, come on, dudes. You know what I'm saying. But hey, sin. It's not logical, my man. It's just not logical. What's so offensive about that? He said, it seems to me. He said that that's how I feel about it. And whether he believes that way just out of personal conviction, because he read it in the Bible and believes it, it's his right to say it, and it's A&E's right, by the way, to fire him for saying it if they don't want that kind of language on, affiliated with one of their stars. And he has the right to go to the Blaze TV or country music television or whatever he wants. You know, that's contractual law. I'm looking for that second part.
I got it. You ready?
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
I myself am a product of the '60s. I center my life around sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Until I hit bottom and accepted Jesus as my Savior. My mission today is to go forth and tell people about why I follow Christ and also what the Bible teaches. And part of that teaching is that women and men are meant to be together. However, I would never treat anyone with disrespect just because they are different from me. We are all created by the Almighty, and like Him, I love all of humanity. We would all be better off if we loved God and loved each other. Yeah, there you go.
I'm offended.
He has some other parts. Yeah, right. Yeah, it's and then there was another part in between the two of them. But, you know, I mean, the point is there. And I don't know anybody, I don't know. You know, I want to get back to this contractual issue that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
If A&E fired somebody or a company fired somebody because they went on some interview and said, I believe in gay marriage, and they fired them, can you imagine the uproar that would be going on in this country?
Sure. And the lawsuits.
Yeah.
And you know, the lawsuits. Let's just
and
say that Phil Roberts.
They'd probably get to, and you know what? They'd probably even find a way to get the government involved.
Of
this
course
the
they
part
would.
This is the part that has people pissed off. This is
of
the
course.
Part that frustrates me. I, you know, like I said, I was not a, you know, dyed-in-the-wool duck dynasty follower, watcher, you know, whatever. And yet, when I read the whole article, you know, and it was a good 3-page article in GQ. I did research. I looked at their background. I got to know the Robinson family. And I'm like going, so what? You know, and the part that frustrated me was not that, I mean, they may have, and here there's two things. Number one, they already knew who he was. The guy's been a preacher for years. You could go back onto YouTube and go back 2010 and before, and you can hear him preaching and teaching the same dynamics of what he believes as a Christian. And it isn't all, and here's the thing, it ain't all about gays, because the second half of his statement, he goes into basic fundamental black and white views of what God views as sin, whether it was gays or bestiality or a man screwing around on his wife or what, you know, or even premarital sex. He's talking about the whole gambit of it as a concept, not focusing on just one thing. And what happened was this group, I can't remember what the name of the group was. They freaked out.
Glad,
because he brought up the gay point. And then people got all confused and tried to link. He said gays are just like bestiality. And it was just like, if you read the damn article, go to the internet, read the article, read the part you read, read the next part where he said, and all he is having a conversation with this guy who's doing the interview. And they, you know, and that was just one part of the whole conversation. And then you can go to YouTube and go back and see him preaching, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago. He's the same guy. Nothing's changed. So when A&E hired him, they already knew who he was. That's the part, I think, number one, that people are frustrated about. Number two,
sure.
if they would have fired somebody who was whatever the hell it is, LGBT, whatever, and got on and said, hey, I believe, you know, we should – you know, gays should all be allowed to get married and blah, blah, blah. And somebody in a company, let's say it was a Christian company, like what's the group
Hobby
that
Lobby.
Was attacked? Hobby Lobby or whatever. And they fired him because he didn't support their views. The left would be lawsuits. This current government would be involved. Mm-hmm. And that's the hypocrisy of it, and that's what I think people are pissed off at. Because I think if you look at all the research I've done and the way I look at it, I agree with you. I believe in free markets. I believe, you know, contractual relationships. If somebody gets up one day and says, hey, you know, this is just not the direction we want to go as a company and our brand, and you guys are, you know, you guys have changed, and we just need to break this contract, that's one thing. But it was none of that was true. Number one, they already knew who he was. He didn't change. And number two, it was over an issue. If it was reversed, would be lawsuits and the whole country, including the government, would come after him. That's the part that has the conservatives and the Christians PO'd. That's the part that frustrates me, because it is not an equal basis. It is the tyranny of the minority, as Levin says. And it's an important issue, and I just find it amazing. And you and I were chatting about this, like, why is this, you know, why is this going viral? It's going viral because, number one, they're big name. And number two, they are who they are. And number three, they're just kind of like standing up for what they believe and speaking what they believe is their religious belief. And I find it amazing that the left embraces a certain religion, and I won't get into details, that like is still stoning these people over in other countries right now.
You're saying,
and they're embracing them politically in this country.
You mean you're saying that if Phil was quoting from the Quran as opposed to the Bible, then he would have been in a protected class.
Yeah.
Well, look, several things
you're
going on
about
here.
Insanity. That's America today.
Yeah, it is insanity. But here's the thing that I find fascinating. There's two aspects of this. Number one is what solves this from a legal perspective. It's not trying to go into the minutia of equal opportunity and freedom of speech and blah, blah, blah. It's very simple. Private property solves this problem. Okay?
Yes.
For example, the Duck Commander brand is owned by the Robertson family. They contract with A&E. The A&E network is owned by A&E. Now, whatever the parameters of that contract would serve to, you know, handle this dispute. If there is a clause in the contract that says if any one of you anywhere in public says something that we find to be controversial, we have a right to sever the contract, and then they choose to exercise that right. Problem solved. You know, Phil can say and believe whatever he wants. And if you respected private property, then these things would just handle themselves in the marketplace of ideas. So private property solves this from a legal perspective, and if we have true federalism, sound money, and a respect for free enterprise and private property, most of these problems would go away. The second aspect of it is cultural. And culturally, you have to understand that you have to fight for the culture that you want in the marketplace of ideas. If you're right, if you're sticking to the truth, and you're an effective communicator who does it in a spirit of true charity and love, you'll win the argument. But the simple fact is that some people will find it offensive, and you might find some things they do offensive. And guess what? In America, you have the right to be offended. But you don't have the right to shut somebody else up because you find what they say offensive. If you think Phil Robertson is offensive, turn off the show. If you think A&E's right, support them. See, that's how it works. And this whole idea of the fact that we can't say something about somebody's behavior that we disagree with because it's going to offend somebody, tough shit. Sack up. That's the problem in this country. Everybody's a pansy who wants to be protected from feeling bad. Sack up, people. Liberty is messy. Freedom is messy, and the world is a rough place. Quit being offended at the slightest drop of a pin.
The more you want government to fight your battles for you, one day everybody's going to wake up and realize that there ain't no more battles to fight because government controls it all. And that's almost where we're at. And that's the part that people don't understand. And you covered it very well from a tactical position, you know, the marketplace of ideas. And I agree with that. I've never lived my life through government, my beliefs, my religious beliefs, my economic beliefs, you know, whatever the case may be. And I live my life, do my thing, and influence people the best I can, you know. And, I mean, the concept of live and let live is a very ambiguous concept because everything impacts everybody. And when somebody says you can't have an opinion about me, but I can have one about you, that's when I got a problem. In other words, you're going to live your life, you're not harming other people, and the law says it's legal, you know, what am I going to say? But that doesn't mean I have to agree with it, and you cannot use the law to force me to change my religious or cultural beliefs. And that's where we're at right now is people are trying to use the law to change how you feel about something. And I'm telling you what, that is about as totalitarian as you can get. And that's scary to think of because, well, the thought police and these minorities of people, whatever they may be, I don't care what it is, whatever it may be, using the law and lawsuits and these boycott mindset to try to force society to change, you ain't changing nothing. All you're doing is making people dig in. And people may get quiet for a while because they're, like, all concerned because they can't handle the onslaught of attacks. But sooner or later, it's going to bust loose. And I think that what makes this particular case study unique is that they've been pushing pretty hard the last few years, and all of a sudden somebody stood up and said, I'm sorry, but this is my belief, how I think. I don't hate you. I love everybody. It's my religion. And c'est la vie, you know, I'm doing my thing, you do your thing. And he stood up, and some people got all offended and tried to use the same techniques they've been using on everybody else, whether it's churches or whatever, or businesses, or whatever the case may be. And this time people said, enough of this crap. And that's what makes an interesting case study.
Well, it's definitely, look, the reason that it's such a potent distraction is because it's a valid point. This isn't American Idol. This isn't, Dancing with the Celebutards. This is a legitimate point that should be discussed, but it's overshadowing a lot of things that they're doing that we should still be paying attention to. But here's the thing that I find interesting. Number one, we don't believe in majoritarianism in this country. It is the rights of the individual. If you're talking about minority rights, the most minor minority you can get to is an individual, and that's what this country is designed to protect, the rights of the individual. Now, that means that if you decide that homosexual behavior is bad and you get a posse together, you go out and beat up some homosexuals, we as a society and as government have a right to prosecute you for assault and battery. The reason is irrelevant. You're not allowed to do those things to people, even if you think their behavior is wrong. And the problem is that all of us are fighting in this marketplace of ideas, but then the solution is always, how do we get the government to fix this problem? And that in itself is the problem.
Is the
because
problem.
If you think that the behavior itself is bad, but you care for people who engage in this behavior, then your job is to convince them to not engage in it, not to pass laws to beat up on them. And conversely, if you happen to be someone who engages in that behavior and you want to be left alone to do it, there's a pretty simple way to do that. Don't advertise it in public to everybody, and nobody will do anything about it. See, that's the thing about liberty. If there is liberty and there is private property, you do what you want as long as you're not involving other people. Now, from a Christian perspective, engaging in that behavior is harmful to society in general, but specifically to the people engaged in it. And if you truly love them, which is what Christmas is all about, you will want to convince them to not do that. But you don't send in the SWAT team to bust them up. You don't advocate violating the Constitution, the principles of liberty, and in fact, the principles of the Christian faith itself, to make that not happen. See, that's the problem. You can swing the pendulum the other way and end up with, you know, Rick Santorum's wet dream where we got a television screen in every bedroom peering into everybody and checking out their behavior. Let's be clear about something. Every single one of you out there who's a self-professed Christian who thinks that this is wrong behavior because you read it in the Bible, look to your own behavior. Because maybe you're not a proponent of gay marriage. Maybe you're not a proponent of homosexual behavior. But you're divorcing at an unbelievable rate. You're contracepting at an unbelievable rate. You're cheating on your wives at an unbelievable rate. You're looking at pornography at an unbelievable rate, but you want to complain about homosexuals? That doesn't make any sense to me. By the same token, if Phil wants to say that he thinks that's a sinful behavior, he doesn't like it, and he uses words like vagina and anus, who are you to tell him he can't say that? See, that's how liberty works. You have a right to be offended. So suck it up, be a big boy, be a big girl, and try to live free. It's very simple.
Yeah, and I see a lot of I wanted to add a point to this. I see a lot of people talking about A&E rehiring him, and I've from day one I've said go find another network. Why do you have to put up with this crap? Because in my research I did quite a bit of it yesterday. They were going along and they were doing what do you call a beep or what is that called? God, where's my brain right now? But, you know, where they would beep out cuss words? They would do on the show. They would beep on the show even though none of them cuss.
Exactly.
And they're like going, why are you doing that? Well, it just makes it look better. And they're like, why? That is not who we are. And so that was one of the issues. The other issue was, you know, in Jesus' name at the end of a prayer. And they're like going, well, you already knew that's what we do, you know, and that's who our God is. So, hello. And so they're continually having these issues. Like you said earlier, they don't want to have guns on a duck hunting show. I mean, the liberal, you know, Michael Savage, you know, the liberal mind, the insanity of it. But when you look at this situation, you go, after a while, you go, okay, the marketplace. Go find a organization who embraces you and will edify you and reach more people, because there's a reason they're the biggest thing since sliced bread on reality TV shows and have such a huge following and a $400-500 million a year retail market off of them. So go find somebody that has like views, you know, whether it be Glenn Beck's, you know, I mean, Beck went down there to Texas and spent his family's fortune to buy a movie studio where many movies that we know about have been produced. Well, he bought this, and he couldn't afford it, and he took this quantum leap or this giant leap into the future of faith because he wanted to create an environment where people like the Robinsons or people who want to do faith-based movies or movies that didn't have filth every, you know, 15 seconds in them, you know, sex and nudity and all this crap, you know, where people go, I want to produce good stuff, but, you know, in Hollywood, you have to put this stuff in your movies, otherwise nobody will play you. Well, that's a social engineering mindset, so if you don't want to support that, you go find people like Beck who are trying to build an environment where people can go, hey, you know, Hollywood wants to be Hollyweird and have that kind of, you know, that kind of world. Fine, we're going to go over here and we're going to set up our own system and our own networks, and we're going to do it our way. That's what America's about, and yep. I'm all for that. So I'm not one of the proponents who say make A&E hire them back. It's kind of like after 3 years of these guys and all their little games and frustrations with them, move on. It's America. Yeah. There are people out there. The whole faith-based, you know, kind of old-fashioned conservative kind of family value kind of world, you know, is still out there in this country, and it's a huge market. The problem is there's such a power system in Hollywood, excuse me, and the lamestream media. You know, it's power. That's all it is. It's just controlling the marketplace, controlling the networks, and controlling the airwaves. Well, people are building new systems because they're sick of it. So let's have this battle of ideas that we talk about in this country between, you know, this European socialism, no God, anything goes, and, you know, your dog, your cat, your sister, your whatever. I don't, you know, whatever. That's that, you know, that side versus our old-fashioned Christian, you know, our God says these things are a sin. Let's, you know, put the marketplace of ideas to work in the marketplace. And that's why my attitude is move on. Find out what, you know, whatever you got to do to move your contract on and move on. And let your dollars and your feet be your vote.
Yeah. Well, speaking of moving on.
Sick of government interfering with everything.
With everything, exactly. Now, speaking of moving on, we're about to move on from live air to recording time and hopefully wrap this up. 5 minutes from now, it'll be midnight on the East Coast, which means Blog Talk Radio will cut you off. If you want to listen live, a bunch of you are, you have to call in on the phone and listen there, 646-649-1013. Otherwise, as always, you can catch the show in archives. Just go to blogtalkradio.com, search out Liberty's Thunder, and every single show we've ever done, the old Texan Rec shows and the new Liberty's Thunder shows, are right there. You can listen in your browser or mobile device, and if you go below the scrolling graphics, you can click the download button, get an MP3, which you can burn as a CD and give to people, or you can send them emails. We really appreciate you sharing the show. Because that's the only way anybody knows it exists. We have no sponsors. We have no advertisers. It costs Chris and I money to do this show. We do it because we want to keep the grassroots conservatives and libertarians focused on winning so that we can turn this country back so that we can all enjoy liberty. But no one will know about unless you tell them. Now, when you tell them, you're not endorsing what I say, what Chris says, or necessarily our perspective. You're just asking people to have an open mind and to get some ideas that maybe they didn't hear somewhere else. Just like watching Duck Dynasty doesn't mean you endorse everything Phil says or that you don't like what Phil says. It's your choice. You've got to figure these things out for yourself. All any of us can do for each other is propose ideas, bang them around, debate them, argue, get to the bottom of things. But the most important thing is that we should always have the right to do that without the intervention of government. And I think that's what this issue with the Duck Commander highlights. I beat up on Rick Santorum a lot here because I think he's a crappy politician, although I generally think he's probably a pretty good guy. Speaking of doing things like what you mentioned with Glenn Beck, he's doing that right now. He's behind this movie, The Christmas Candle.
That's true.
Trying to engage the culture and change people's minds that way. And I applaud him for that, and I will support him for that, and I appreciate that he's doing it. Just if you're listening, Mr. Santorum, just whatever you do, don't run for office again. You really suck as a politician. You're a big government rhino. You're an embarrassment to people who identify themselves as Christians. So just stick with taking on the culture and don't screw up politics anymore. Exactly. we played one clip from last year's show. You can listen to the whole show. It'll still be relevant because pretty much everything we talked about is still happening today. It's on our page. But I don't know that we'll have any more clips to play, Chris, unless you've got something you want to get into. We'll just start wrapping this up.
I don't know. What are we talking about?
Well, it's Christmas. We can talk about whatever we want. And what I think is that how does this issue with Phil Robertson, the Duck Commander, and A&E parallel what's going on with the Republican Party and the conservatives? Now, think of it this way.
Well, am I interrupting you? Sorry.
Well, I was going to say that A&E created the Duck Dynasty show in order to make fun of rednecks, Christians, and conservatives. And what they ended up with was a very successful show, a show that opened its last season with 2 million more people than the closing of Breaking Bad, which is apparently a very popular show on cable TV. So it is a cultural success, it is an economic success, and so A&E is having trouble managing it. So A&E has been looking for an opportunity, without losing too much revenue, of shutting these guys down. And it looks like Barbara Walters handed it to them turning the tables on this thing after Phil snubbed her interview. Much the same as the RNC is constantly looking for ways to shut down the conservatives in the Republican
Party. Exactly. Yeah, that's a very good point. I'm glad that I stopped and gave it back to you to make that point. And this is really what, you know, the theme of probably most of our conversations and shows are about, is inside our party. You could spend all day every day, you know, bitching about the libs and the Dems and the Marxists and the communists and what they're trying to do to this country. They're pretty much doing exactly what they told their constituents they would do. Vote for me and I'll give you more, and vote for me and we'll destroy the Republicans and the Christians and the conservatives. You know, so I don't really have a problem with them. I have a problem with what they're doing and what it's doing to my country, but they're pretty consistent. What I have a problem with is the people who come into the Republican Party. And we have this platform. I don't know how many people have ever bothered to read it, kind of like the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. Have you read it? You know, and look at that platform and go, well, we vote on that platform, you know, from the precinct all the way up to the RNC, and they build that platform and say, this is what our party stands for, whether it be no new taxes or smaller government or, you know, whatever the case, conservative family values or whatever the case, it's all right there. So if you ever wonder, you know, and I often wonder when people will challenge me on things on the group about, you know, oh, well, there was a good deal or they had to do a deal, and I'm thinking, well, have you read the platform? They're violating their basic platform that the people of the party, all the way up through the precincts and the captains and all these people and the delegates have voted for and agreed upon that this is what we stand for and this is what we fight for. And then they go to Washington and they violate it on a daily basis. So after a certain point in time, whether it be through the you know, Bush era, or even after, like, when Newt left the House and they went on a they just all, like, turned to Democrats. Not all of them, but, you know, most of them. And they did some horrendous things against their principled foundation. You know, what they voted for and agreed on when they run for office. They're looking at this platform and going, this is my oath. I agree with this. Now back me and give me money, and I'll go fight for this. And then they get in there, and they do the exact opposite. That is what the problem is. That's the problem I have. In other words, if you want to change the platform and say, you know, we're for this, we're for that, and we're for the other, okay, fine. That's what the party is. Now I make a decision whether I back you or not. But don't tell me that this is what the party is to get my vote and my money and then turn around to the opposite. I have a bigger problem with that type of traitor than I do with the person who openly says, I'm going to transform America, vote for me, because that's what people voted for him to do, and that's what he's in the process of doing. He's doing what he said he got in office to do. So how do you be mad at that? You got to be mad at the people who can't stop him, who have the power to stop him, traitors in the Republican Party. It's that simple. I mean, it's not an emotional thing to me. It's just Boehner or whatever. It's like, look at the facts. Lay it out on a piece of paper and ask yourself, in any kind of transaction in my life, or even a family member or a friend, if a friend said, our friendship is based on this, and then they came to your house and stole your food out of your freezer while you weren't there, and your friendship was based on a certain thing, you would feel violated, you'd be pissed off, and you might kick some butt. It's that simple. It doesn't get any more complicated than that. When you spend your time and energy, and it is amazing to me how much time and energy people spend trying to justify these traitors' actions. That's what blows me away. Do you get it yet? They have been screwing you for years, and then you make excuses for them. Well, it's in the Constitution. You're supposed to have a balanced budget. Well, life is bigger than that. You have to look at the big picture and look behind the scenes at what just happened and the way they gave up the power for the next 2 years and basically handed everything over that we just spent the last, you know, since 2010 or 2009 when the Tea Party movement launched to get this power back so that we could fight this crap. And then they turn around and handed it over to the guy that you guys post and bitch about all day long on Facebook. You got to quit it making excuses for these people. And in 2014, replace them. I mean, you could vote Democrat and you get the same damn thing. At least you'd know who you're voting for. I mean, you know, not that I'm a Democrat, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, yeah, it's the same vote because they're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Oh, it's embarrassing. And that's the frustration. This is what people do not understand. When you talk about, you know, right wingers and extremists and this stuff, I'm like going, I don't really feel like an extremist. I mean, I read the Constitution, right? I read a lot of our founding fathers, you know, writings, not as much as I hope to before I die, but, you know, I read a lot, I study a lot, I make decisions on what I believe, and then I look politically to people who have similar values. And I go, that's the person I'm going to back, support, you know, give money to and vote for. Well, when they violate that, they are a liar. Okay, so when do you finally figure it out that how many times do they have to screw us or you before you get up and go, I am not going to vote this person back in office again? Some of these guys have been in there 20, 30, 40 years. And their records are all online. You can get online. When you got some organization that claims that McConnell has 100% conservative rating, the first thing you have to do is go, just common sense, whether you like McConnell or not or kind of like him, you just have to look at him and go, well, it's obvious he doesn't have 100% conservative rating. Rand Paul doesn't, and he's 9 times more conservative than McConnell. So you look at that rating and you go, okay, who in the hell is that organization who's paying him? Follow the money. Then you go over to somebody like Heritage or the other one, I can't remember the other one, who actually does real research into their records, and he's got like a 65% conservative rating. You go, oh, now that makes more sense. That's about right. Or 80, depending on who the person you're looking for. Ryan,
you're talking
about
the New American.
65%. Yeah, right, New American or Heritage. You look at people who actually break it down where you can look at the bills they voted on, and they will tell you why that was a bad vote, and they will explain themselves, and you can educate and go, oh, wow, I want to vote for this guy, or I don't want to vote for this guy. After you get the facts, the problem with media and even the internet is 90% of it is controlled conjecture. They're using it as a manipulation. Everybody thinks you go to the internet and you get the truth. Bull crap. Marketers have control of the internet, including Facebook groups and social media. They pay people to go out there and create dialogue and create dissension or create, you know, people who will, trolls, we call them, who will run around and go, well, at least we got a balanced budget. That's really important.
It's not balanced.
Yeah, did you look at the damn bill? You know? Did you look at what they did, the fact that the House gave up their power for the next 2 years, going into a major important election? Oh, they did
something
that's important? Well, they lied. That was something. You know, and so that's where you have to, I don't know, man. I mean, I don't consider myself a really intelligent person. I just consider myself to have common sense and the ability to research. I know what I believe in. I know what I'm looking for, because sometimes it's smoky and gray and hazy, and you've got to dig and learn and read and counsel with other people who have a better understanding of things and ask questions and get a clear picture. And then after a while, it gets real simple. Traitor? Somebody fighting for me and what I believe in the Constitution. It gets really simple after a while. Vote them out. Get rid of them, because if they're voting Democrat anyway, who gives a crap? You know, I guess, you know, I love when McConnell and the rest of these guys get in there and go, yeah, we need the House and we need the Senate, and then in 2016 give us a president. Well, we just went through that with the Bush era. And he broke records in spending, got us in two major wars that we've never gotten out of. You know, and for over some questionable things, not Afghanistan, but Iraq was, and the money and the debt and five debt ceiling increases and foreign entanglements around the world and the Patriot Act. And, you know, you go, well, yeah, but he was a Republican. He didn't act like one. My blood pressure's up.
Well, I don't consider you a very intelligent person either, because you do a radio show with me once a week. but no,
thank you.
The point is very valid. I mean, first of all, it's not just about voting for conservatives as opposed to just voting for Republicans, whether they're conservative or not, because every single one of us only controls one vote. It is about getting other people informed about what the effects are of policies that are out of bounds with the Constitution that affect all our lives, no matter what your perspective is, no matter what your religion is, no matter what sexual practices you have, no matter what light bulb you want to use, no matter what you like to eat or don't eat, they affect everything. And that's the fundamental problem. If you truly want to be free, then you also have to respect the freedom of others. And to do that, you have to accept the fact that sometimes you will be offended. Now, that doesn't mean you can't set community standards. That doesn't mean certain behaviors or certain things should be illegal. You know, we're not advocating anarchy here. But you have to understand that political activism is going to require you to get other people active and involved. It can't just be listening to the show, agreeing with some points, disagreeing with others, and then going to vote for those who you think are right. Share the show. Communicate with us. Maybe you have an idea you want us to talk about. We'll do that. Get on our page, Liberty's Thunder on Facebook, or in Chris's group, Coalition of Freedom. But get other people involved, because this is their country too. And what the government and the elitists are trying to do is convince everybody that they need the government, and the government will provide them what they need, so vote for more of us who are going to spend other people's money to give you what you need. Well, that's not going to work out in the long run for anybody except those at the very top. So what you have to inform people is that you go out and get what you need, and if somebody's truly down on their luck, you help them out, you lift them up, you take care of it in your community. But we can't do that if we're all getting robbed by the Federal Reserve, the IRS, the government, and they're pissing away money so that instead of giving, you know, you're all in an uproar because they cut veterans' COLA adjustments. Well, why shouldn't they cut veterans' COLA adjustments? Well, I don't know. Maybe they should cut veterans' COLA adjustments. But why would you cut their COLA adjustments first before you cut the congressmen and senators' salaries, before you cut the president's salary, before you cut the non-combat
waste.
Federal employees' salaries?
How about waste
salaries?
And fraud?
How about waste and fraud? Why don't you get under control? How about instead of giving millions of dollars in tax breaks for prostitutes and pimps in Nevada, Mr. Reed, maybe we could have kept the COLA adjustments for veterans? I mean, again, you can't only be concerned about the cuts that affect you. We've got to take cuts across the board. But you can't expect me to accept painful cuts for people who put their lives on the line in this country. Whether the wars are valid or not is not the point. That's why people signed up for the military, to put their lives on the line. Your politicians sent them to the wrong place. But before I accept those cuts, which I think we probably do have to accept, there's 6 zillion other things you can cut first. So it's not only an issue of prioritizing them right, but we have to all accept cuts across the board because we don't have these trillions of dollars. The whole thing's going to come crashing down. You can either wait till that happens and deal with the zombie apocalypse afterwards, or we can start fixing it now. But that's only going to happen if you get more people involved. Now, this show is supposed to be a happy, happy, happy Christmas show. But we've talked about some pretty scary and annoying things. But you have to understand something, and whether you're a Christian or not a Christian is hardly the point here. If you're a Christian, then you know what Christmas is, and if you're not, I'd suggest you check it out. It's pretty cool. It's a very unique and wonderful holiday because we're celebrating the breaking of eternity into time, where the infinite God is choosing to become one of us, and that's a very powerful thing. But from a political perspective, okay, one of the first principles of authentic conservatism, and that's what we need to advocate for in order to have a truly free and virtuous society, is the conservative believes that there exists an enduring moral order. Okay, that order is good for man, and man is made for it. Human nature is a constant, and moral truths are permanent. Now, if you don't believe that, then you probably shouldn't be listening to the show because you're not a conservative, and you're probably not really a genuine libertarian either. You're something else. Maybe you're an ANCAP. But if you're a conservative or a conservative libertarian, you do believe that. And that's the truth. Because 10,000 years of human history have just shown us this. And if you, Chris mentioned it earlier, the Old Testament, if you look at the period in Israel between the judges and the kings, you can see how without an appeal to an objective moral order, you're going to get an authoritarian regime of man. And that's what we want to avoid. Now, the interesting thing is that, I'm quoting here from Russell Kirk. We've done part one of the show talking about the principles he outlined. That's American Conservatism Defined, or Conservative Chain Reaction, on our show page. So go check it out. We'll do more of them. But I'm quoting here from Russell Kirk. It has been said by liberal intellectuals that the conservative believes all social questions at heart to be questions of private morality. Properly understood, the statement is quite true. A society in which men and women are governed by belief in an enduring moral order, by a strong sense of right and wrong, by personal convictions about justice and honor, will be a good society, whatever political machinery it may utilize. While a society in which men and women are morally adrift, ignorant of norms, and intent chiefly upon gratification of appetites, will be a bad society, no matter how many people vote no, and no matter how little its formal constitution may be. That's a very, very good point. You know, we're seeking a free and virtuous society. Government is not going to make us virtuous. You have to make virtue happen. You have to be a witness to virtue. You have to be in touch with the author of virtue to be virtuous and for our marketplace to be virtuous. Government is supposed to protect our individual rights of liberty. That's what it's for. It's not provide us with stuff. It is not to give you a phone. It's not to make you buy health insurance. It's not supposed to tell you what kind of light bulb you can have. It's supposed to guarantee your existing rights to individual liberty. What you do with those rights is up to you. And what we do as a society is up to us. But you can't have liberty without virtue, because if you're going to have a vicious society, then government is going to grow, because those that are drawn to govern the government will be vicious from the vicious society. That's why this is important. That's why you have to focus on this. That's why you don't spend your time trying to make things illegal that are bad behaviors, when what you should be doing is convincing people in their hearts not to engage in those behaviors, because the government is supposed to guarantee your right to liberty. You're supposed to make it virtuous, not the other way around. Because any time you ask the government to become your moral teacher, you are heading towards totalitarianism. And I guarantee you that the men that end up running the government will not spread virtue. They will spread vice. Because if you're addicted to heroin, sex, brownies, video games, gambling, or whatever other vice there is, you are far easier to control than people who stand on virtue, which is why cultural Marxism demands that we silence someone like Phil Robertson, because he spoke his mind. He spoke his mind, and that what that highlighted is, one, you're entitled to your opinion. Two, he believes in the Christian morality and wants to preach it and spread it, not by law, not by force of gun, but by the power of his words and the power of truth. And he countermanded those who are marketing evil to your children and marketing evil in this society in order to make you docile slaves distracted by bread and circuses who are easy to control and plunder and keep under this fake paper regime of money, spending money we don't have and invading the world with resources that we don't have in order to plunder it for the corporations. That's what this is about. And if you really want to celebrate Christmas, then what you have to take from that is the spirit of Christmas, the reason that God condescended to come live amongst us, to set the captives free. And then you have to go effect that. That's your duty. That's your responsibility. And if you have the conviction and you have thought about it and you've applied common sense, you're not infallible, you'll make mistakes, but if for the most part you got it right, then you get other people to do the same. And we can start fixing what's wrong with where we are. But if you sit back on your butt and do nothing about it other than bitch and post pictures of Obama, then nothing will happen. It is totally up to you. Chris, you want to say something before we go to our closing? I'm going to close out with a little bit of Reagan.
Oh, that was beautiful. Good old Reagan. You know, the Reagan Revolution happened for a reason. It was very I was a teenager during the Carter administration. I remember the gas lines. I remember shutting down our thermostat to 65 degrees to save energy. I remember the hostage situation. I remember a president that didn't have a damn clue what he was doing. And I remember Ford, you know, the Rhinos and the Rockefeller Republicans, you know, defeating Ronald Reagan, and then Ford going on to lose to Carter. And then the revolution continued to build through the grassroots of society, and Reagan came in and blew it away for a couple, you know, for both terms, and he reformed. And I wouldn't say he did everything perfect. He didn't. He made some mistakes. He trusted the Democrats on some things, you know, some promise cuts, if you'll give us this and all that kind of, you know, kind of like what Ryan just did to us again, you know, promises for the future that will never happen. But basically, you know, if you study that whole dynamics, our society was looking, you know, we came out of the Nixon era, the 60s, the Vietnam, everything was a mess. And it's amazing, you know, because everybody gets all freaked out about what's going on in today's society. It was pretty ugly back there. You know, the whole, you know, the 60s revolution, Vietnam going on, our economy, you know, sitting in line for an hour to get the gas, you know, limited gas, all that kind of stuff, energy. And along comes a man who stands on what he believes and gets up and isn't afraid to speak the truth, isn't worried about what all the consultants have to say, and he carries this message of greatness. And what you were talking about, you know, that moral fiber of our society, that America is great, that because of the citizens and all that kind of stuff, it's really neat. You can go to YouTube, you can listen to tons of old Reagan clips and listen to the man speak, listen to him in his debates. And that started with the people. They just had a man that was willing to stand up and say, this is what I believe, this is what I'm willing to fight for, and this is what I'm going to do. And people followed him and voted him into office. We had an incredible turnaround in our country. We can do that again. If there's a Christmas message, a positive Christmas message in our show tonight, is that it's right there on the cusp. When you look at what President Obama's doing, you look at what the rhinos are doing, how they're attacking the Tea Party, which is really bizarre because it's not a party. But you know what I'm saying. But they're trying to attack the idea of the Tea Party. We're extremists, we're this, we're that, we're the other. And in reality, if you look at the basic platform of the Republican Party and you look at what the Tea Party stood for, that's about it. They're not extremists, and you know, they're definitely not right-wing libertarians, you know, or ANCAPs. And so when you look at the amount of energy and time and money that's being spent to destroy or go after the Tea Party and the Rand Pauls and the Cruises and the Amash and all this thing that's going on, it's only one reason. They're scared to death. They're going to lose their power. And we're going to vote in a whole new batch of people, and we're going to empower the people that are in Congress that are fighting for our country and fighting for the Constitution and same financial and foreign policy. And they're afraid that that's going to be empowered even more because they've seen this revolution. They saw it with the Gingrich Republican Revolution in the mid-90s. They saw it with the Reagan Revolution. And here we are again. That's where we're at. And that's encouraging to me because when the pressure's the hardest means the enemy is at their weakest. You know, when the noise is the loudest means they're freaking out. If they weren't freaking out, they wouldn't be fighting so hard. They wouldn't be lying so much. They wouldn't be spending so much money and all the news repeating, you know, the same dialogue and the words they use to try to scare people away from conservatives and Tea Party and Christians. And that's what this battle's about. And it wouldn't be such a battle if they weren't afraid. And that is encouraging. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's very encouraging. They should be afraid. They're afraid. They should be afraid because what this attack, you know, it's not a free speech violation of his First Amendment rights because the government didn't do it yet. But this attack against Phil Robertson, the Duck Commander, highlights the fact that the leftist, relativist, modernist minority in this country is trying to pervert the rest of our culture. But our culture struck back. And you can't just be right, and you can't just be good by yourself because we live together. You have to prevent them from taking away our rights of individual liberty in order to advance a virtuous culture. And the only way that you can do that is from the grassroots on up. And as Chris said, when they're freaking out like this, it's because there's more of us than there is of them, and we are right, and they are losing, and we are winning. Now, the problem is the duopoly is still perverted, twisted, and corrupt, and fighting every single conservative in their ranks. You have to defend them. You have to support them. You have to keep your eye on them, and you have to send in reinforcements. But at this time of year, we're talking about Christmas, and it's a time of joy and hope. And we should be joyful and hopeful to be here to have this fight. Because of 7 billion people on this planet, there's 300 million of us that are here to have this fight. Most people in this world live under tyranny. We have an opportunity to correct it because we have a history of liberty. Not a perfect history. It's a flawed history. But you got to love your country, warts and all, and work to make her better together. And you do that by limiting the power of government so that human freedom can flourish. And I'm going to close with one line from the second chapter of the Gospel according to Luke. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly army praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace to men of goodwill." And that's men and women of goodwill, Christians, Jews, Muslims, Hindus, atheists, agnostics. It doesn't really matter from the perspective of political liberty. If you want everybody to be a Christian, then you got to preach to them, and you got to convince them. You can't force them to do it. No one becomes a Christian through force. Everybody does it as a personal choice. But if you don't work with people of goodwill, no matter what their beliefs, in order to further the cause of liberty, then none of us will be free to practice or not practice religion the way that we see. None of us will be free to raise our families the way that we think we should raise them. None of us will be free to engage in business practices in our community that benefit our community. That's what it's about. So learn to get along, learn to work together, and be happy, happy, happy. Merry Christmas from Rex and Trog. We'll see you next Sunday, 10 p.m. Eastern. This is Rex and Trog signing off.
Hey, you know what?
What?
I forgot the... I'm sorry, man. I lost my mind. What's the last thing?
The thunder of liberty rumbles
on. I'm so sorry.
All right, Merry Christmas.
I was so mesmerized by your final statement there.
Thanks,
Merry Christmas.
All right. Merry Christmas to all.
Father, especially at this time of year, Christmas, thank you for sending Jesus to the earth 2013 years ago. Thank you, Father, for his death, his sacrifice for us that removes our sin. Thank you, Father, for guaranteeing 3 days later that all of us can be raised from the dead as he was. We love you for that. Thank you for your grace and mercy. And it's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
The Robertsons love Christmas. Nowadays, there's way more presents, the meals are bigger, and the Christmas lights might number in the millions. But we have not forgotten the true meaning for the season. We gather to honor our Lord as a family. We talk of Christmases of old, watch the kids rip into their presents, and of course we sing. God says make a joyful noise, and when it comes to our Savior being born on this earth, we will do just that. We will sing from our hearts. But as far as Uncle Si goes, we may have told him to take a tiny step back from the mic.
I feel like a thoroughbred racehorse, all right? And my jockey, hey, he won't turn me loose and let me run.
Good evening. At Christmas time, every home takes on a special beauty, a special warmth. And that's certainly true of the White House, where so many famous Americans have spent their Christmases over the years. This fine old home, the People's House, has seen so much, been so much a part of all our lives and history. It's been humbling and inspiring for Nancy and me to be spending our first Christmas in this place. We've lived here as your tenants for almost a year now. And what a year it's been. As a people, we've been through quite a lot. Moments of joy, of tragedy, and of real achievement. Moments that I believe have brought us all closer together. G.K. Chesterton once said that the world would never starve for wonders, but only for the want of wonder. At this special time of year, we all renew our sense of wonder in recalling the story of the first Christmas in Bethlehem nearly 2,000 years ago. Some celebrate Christmas as the birthday of a great and good philosopher and teacher. Others of us believe in the divinity of the child born in Bethlehem, that he was and is the promised Prince of Peace. Yes, we've questioned why he who could perform miracles chose to come among us as a helpless babe. But maybe that was his first miracle, his first great lesson that we should learn to care for one another. Tonight, in millions of American homes, the glow of the Christmas tree is a reflection of the love Jesus taught us. Like the shepherds and wise men of that first Christmas, we Americans have always tried to follow a higher light, a star, if you will. At lonely campfire vigils along the frontier, in the darkest days of the Great Depression, through war and peace, the twin beacons of faith and freedom, have brightened the American sky. At times, our footsteps may have faltered, but trusting in God's help, we've never lost our way. Just across the way from the White House stand the two great emblems of the holiday season, a menorah symbolizing the Jewish festival of Hanukkah and the national Christmas tree, a beautiful towering blue spruce from Pennsylvania. Like the national Christmas tree, our country is a living, growing thing planted in rich American soil. Only our devoted care can bring it to full flower. So let this holiday season be for us a time of rededication. Even as we rejoice, however, let us remember that for some Americans, this will not be as happy a Christmas as it should be. I know a little of what they feel. I remember one Christmas Eve during the Great Depression, my father opening what he thought was a Christmas greeting. It was a notice that he no longer had a job. Over the past year, we've begun the long, hard work of economic recovery. Our goal is an America in which every citizen who needs and wants a job can get a job. Our program for recovery has only been in place for 12 weeks now, but it is beginning to work. With your help and prayers, it will succeed. We're winning the battle against inflation, runaway government spending, and taxation. And that victory will mean more economic growth, more jobs, and more opportunity for all Americans. A few months before he took up residence in this house, one of my predecessors, John Kennedy, tried to sum up the temper of the times with a quote from an author closely tied to Christmas, Charles Dickens. "We were living," he said, "in the best of times and the worst of times." Well, in some ways, that's even more true today. The world is full of peril as well as promise. Too many of its people, even now, live in the shadow of want and tyranny. As I speak to you tonight, the fate of a proud and ancient nation hangs in the balance. For 1,000 years, Christmas has been celebrated in Poland, a land of deep religious faith. But this Christmas brings little joy to the courageous Polish people. They have been betrayed by their own government. The men who rule them and their totalitarian allies fear the very freedom that the Polish people cherish. They have answered the stirrings of liberty with brute force, killings, mass arrests, and the setting up of concentration camps. Lech Walesa and other solidarity leaders are imprisoned, their fate unknown. Factories, mines, universities, and homes have been assaulted. The Polish government has trampled underfoot solemn commitments to the UN Charter and the Helsinki Accords. It has even broken the Gdansk Agreement of August 1980, by which the Polish government recognized the basic right of its people to form free trade unions and to strike. The tragic events now occurring in Poland, almost 2 years to the day after the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, have been precipitated by public and secret pressure from the Soviet Union. It is no coincidence that Soviet Marshal Kulikov, chief of the Warsaw Pact forces, and other senior Red Army officers were in Poland while these outrages were being initiated. And it is no coincidence that the martial law proclamations imposed in December by the Polish government were being printed in the Soviet Union in September. The target of this depression is the Solidarity movement. But in attacking Solidarity, its enemies attack an entire people. 10 million of Poland's 36 million citizens are members of Solidarity. Taken together with their families, they account for the overwhelming majority of the Polish nation. Once, earlier in this century, an evil influence threatened that the lights were going out all over the world. Let the light of millions of candles in American homes give notice that the light of freedom is not going to be extinguished. We're blessed with a freedom and abundance denied to so many. Let those candles remind us that these blessings bring with them a solemn obligation, an obligation to the God who guides us, an obligation to the heritage of liberty and dignity handed down to us by our forefathers, and an obligation to the children of the world, whose future will be shaped by the way we live our lives today. Christmas means so much because of one special child. But Christmas also reminds us that all children are special, that they are gifts from God, gifts beyond price that mean more than any presents money can buy. In their love and laughter, in our hopes for their future, lies the true meaning of Christmas. So, in a spirit of gratitude for what we've been able to achieve together over the past year, and looking forward to all that we hope to achieve together in the years ahead, Nancy and I want to wish you all the best of holiday seasons. As Charles Dickens, whom I quoted a few moments ago, said so well in A Christmas Carol, God bless us, everyone. Good night.
Oh, holy night, the stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pining, till he appeared and the soul felt its worth. A thrill and glorious morn. Fall on your knees. Oh, hear the angel voices. Oh, night divine. When Christ was born. Oh, night divine. Oh, night. Oh, night divine.
Shall he break, for the slave is our brother, and in his name all the oppression shall cease. Sweet hymns of joy in grateful chorus raise, we let all praise his holy name. Christ is the Lord, let ever, ever praise thee.
Oh, night divine.